Blog Talk Radio. Firefly Willows LIVE presents The Amethyst Oracle, Divination with a Queer Twist, featuring your hosts, Heisey Lutmers and Charlie Harrington.
The Amethyst Oracle.
Delve into life, death, and everything betwixt, between, and beyond.
Between and beyond.
Between and beyond.
With a queer twist.
The Amethyst Oracle. Divination with a queer twist. And now, here are your hosts, Charlie Harrington and Heisey Lutmers.
Hello, hello everyone. Thank you for listening. Welcome to the show. This is the Amethyst Oracle, Divination with a Queer Twist. And this is Heisey. And my co-host Charlie is actually in LA this week, so he's going to be joining us here momentarily. I just want to remind you that you can always find us on Facebook at facebook.com/theamethystoracle, and we would always welcome a continuation of any conversation or topic that we bring up during the show. You're welcome to come there and post comments, ask questions, offer your interpretations and input about cards that come up or topics that we're talking about and that kind of thing. Even if it's a question about something that a guest has talked about, you're welcome to post that there and we'll make sure to forward it on so that they know to respond to it for you. You can call in this evening if you would like to receive a reading live on the air, and we'll be doing that in the latter portion of the show. If you'd like to do that, then you can either Skype in from the show page, or you can call in, and the phone number is 646-716-5510, and Charlie and I would be more than happy to do a reading for you if you would like to call in for that this evening. We have a couple of very interesting things coming up. Our guest this evening is Lee Burstyn. He is a tarot reader and also studies astrology and probably is best known as the creator of the Gay Tarot. And we're also, of course, we have our regular Living the Queer Life segment, which helps us just pull some cards and see how to best live our lives to the fullest extent possible in the coming month. And our first segment is actually going to be a little bit around the sun and the energies of the sun with summer solstice coming up on the 20th of June. And this is a really key time to be tapping into, accessing, and utilizing the energies of the sun and what it offers. So Charlie and I are going to offer you a couple of different magical techniques, if you want to call them that, to be able to do that. So why don't I go ahead and give you a little intro song for that segment, and that as soon as that plays, we'll come right back and I will be here with Charlie.
Here comes the sun, little darling, here comes the sun, I say, it's alright, it's alright. Here comes the sun, little darling, here comes the sun, I say, it's alright.
We will give a little shout out to our special musical guest there, Nina Simone, for joining us
the
this evening here on the
Nina
show.
Simone.
Yes, hello, Charlie. Welcome to the show. Uh-oh. Are you there, Charlie Harrington? Well, perhaps he's having a little bit of issues because I know that he's calling in from a hotel room in LA, which sometimes can be a little bit dicey. So let me just explain a little bit about this first segment while Charlie is working to call back in. The summer solstice is coming on June 20th, And that is when the sun is at its peak. And, you know, the sun is full of energy and light. And when it's at its peak, it really is giving us access to energies that are about being confident and courageous, going out in the world and accomplishing and doing what it is that we want. It's also about shining in the world. And these are some very important energies to tap into, because from the summer solstice on through the rest of the year, then the light starts to go away. And so what we want to do is we want to harness that energy so that we can carry it with us as the days are getting darker. And we have that energy to continue motivating us, to continue drawing on when we need it. And, you know, in the tarot, there is the sun card. And the sun card is one that comes near the end of the major arcana. And this is a card that starts to bring us towards the completion of a big or a major phase or cycle of our life or something that we're working on. And so it also is there just like with the summer solstice. And that is, it's both showing us the energy that we have built up as we've made our way through the process and cycle of the major arcana. And it also shows us that we are now ready to fully shine in the world. And that's what we wanted to both talk about in terms of what that card can represent, and especially this time of year, and also give you a couple of techniques around. I also wanted to mention that astrologically, Jupiter is extremely well aspected at this time and goes into a particular phase that lasts for the next year. There's a lot of other aspects to it and a lot of other things going on that kind of happen once every 20 years or so. And Jupiter is very much an energy of expansion, growth, pushing out beyond our barriers and kind of the boundaries and limitations we've set for ourselves. So that can be really important at this time as well to be accessing. And by using these techniques and tapping into that sun energy, it's really going to kind of infuse and fuel that Jupiter energy, and vice versa. Jupiter really fuels the energy of that sun aspect that's coming in. So, Charlie, what is some of your thoughts around the sun card in the tarot and what it represents for you?
Well, it's interesting. Oh, hi, C. How are you? It's interesting. The sun, to me, is one of those cards that people don't seem to spend a lot of time on, including myself. Most major arcana got these big, long-winded descriptions about, you know, growth and challenges or barriers or everything. And the sun, people look at it and think, oh, everything's good, everything's all right, it's fine. Like, I find people don't spend too much time on it. And so it probably gets short shrift just because it's such a uncomplicated positive card in many ways.
Well, I think that it's almost like it almost blinds us to the shadow aspects of the card, you know, because it's so bright. It's kind of like, you know, the future's so bright, I have to wear shades. It's like it's so bright, and we feel like it's so positive. And where it comes in the major arcana, you really come through
so
a pretty hard time.
Yes.
And it is kind of that coming into the light. You know, when I look at the major arcana, the death card through the star card, and then into the moon card, is really kind of that journey into the underworld and into the darkness. And then you get to the sun and you come out of the sun. So you go from the moon, which is kind of that final depth of darkness, and then emergence when you come into the sun to come back out into the light. And I think that the same way that the light kind of hurts your eyes when you walk outside and it's suddenly very bright, I think people get dazzled by that brightness. And it's almost like being born or something. It's one of those things where it was so traumatic what I went through that I've decided not to remember it. So I'm just going to focus on the brightness and shininess of this light. So what are some of the aspects of the sun and the energy of the sun that you think people don't heed or pay attention to?
Well, I think people need to lighten up with the sun because, like people, like you mentioned, it sequence, it comes after the tower and then the star and the moon, and then so it's that period. So people can get really caught up in themselves and their journey and really like be unsure. Is this it? Is this ready? So people can just lighten up. And it's not journey's end by any means. It's a nice break, you know. Judgment in the world come afterward. So it's also, I think, about being enlightened. So when you're doing really well, it's important to have compassion for others, which people can forget about, especially after they've gone through something difficult. So I think it reminds us to be aware of other people's pain and not get sucked in by that, but just, you know, help them lighten up.
So. And I think that's one of the challenges of the sun card or sun energy, even at this time with summer solstice and the sun energy, is it also can be very much about ego. And we can be very dazzled by ourselves. And like you were saying, forget to be compassionate towards others, because suddenly our ego has decided that I'm right or what I want is the most important thing. And now I'm going to kind of steamroll or burn my way through and maybe forget or not worry about who gets burned in the process.
I've heard people describe it as like people feeling like they're the center of the universe or the center of the solar system, you know.
Right. And that can be good on the one hand if you express it positively, which is feeling confident and courageous and being willing to kind of step out into the world fully as yourself and pursue the things that you want to go after. But, you know, on the one hand, it can be that ego that we're talking about, which starts to take over, and then we start to become something that is kind of burning our way through the world and leaving a trail of ashes in our wake. And also, I've often seen the sun card come up. Now, I deal with reversals, so this would be more the reversed aspect, but I've seen it come up when people burn themselves out. They're doing too much, or they're burning the candle at both ends, but they can get very burned out because they go too much, too hard, too fast.
You know, also, funny thing about the sun, though, is that a lot of the books, even Aleister Crowley's material, like, when they talk about reversals, can talk about really, like, you know, the opposite of the card and really darkness. But often the sun, when reversed in these books, you'll find it's just still pretty positive, but not as positive. You know, it's not a bad card anyway. It lies.
Well, yeah, and I tend to think of it because it kind of represents the ultimate of fire, and so you know, fire too much can be a problem. But, like, if you take fire down to a bonfire or down to a fireplace, the fire is still there. The heat is still there. And it's just in a controlled and manageable form. So it's not something bad about the fire. It's just that we've learned how to work with the fire. And maybe the reversal can indicate a tempering or a control of the fire sometimes that may be needed. Because we are either burning ourselves out or we're burning other people.
Yeah, I also associate the sun card with pride, both literally, like, pride happens in the summer when it's sunny and whatever, like the pride, gay pride, but also just the aspect of pride and just living out loud and not hiding who you are, not hiding your light. So, you know what I mean? You know, just sort of being effortlessly yourself. Does that make sense?
Yes. No, I totally see the sun card that way, too, because I see it, the sun card kind of represents being naked in the world and not caring. It just says, here I am, world, love me or leave me, but it doesn't matter because I love myself. And, you know, it makes me think of summer because that's when we're taking our clothes off. That's when we're in shorts, that we're in swimsuits or we're naked at the beach or whatever. And I would be curious, something you just said, I would be curious if there was any thought given about making June Gay Pride Month. Because June is when summer solstice is. And so you have that sense of what you just said, living out loud, being very bright in the world, you know, just allowing ourselves to be proud and shine in the world. And it seems very interesting to me that when that energy is at its peak within the year is when the month of Gay Pride was initiated or inaugurated.
Also because that's Judy Garland, her funeral was in June, and so I'm sure there's some there, but that was the original reason, right? The Stonewall riots for Gay Pride Month. But it has stuck, and it has taken on all kinds of new meanings.
Yes. And that's one of the reasons why we thought it would be fun to have Lee Burstyn on today, since he created the Gay Tarot, which is
a fabulous deck.
Yes, which was one of the, what I think was the first mainstream gay-themed tarot decks.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah. And, like, overtly, there's been read-between-the-lines gay decks before, where, for example, the Sun card in the Renaissance Tarot might suggest it's a gay-friendly deck, or the Cosmic Tribe Tarot, but this one was gay. It was out of the closet. It was the first deck to come out of the closet. How about that?
That's right. Since it was willing to step out there and shine its light in the world, we thought we'll shine a light on him during this month. Now, and I would encourage people, as we're talking about the Sun card, these are the energies that are extremely prevalent and extremely strong at this time of year, and these are the kind of things that we want to be thinking about as well as tapping into. So to do that, we've come up with a couple of suggestions, a couple of techniques, one might call them magical if one wanted to help access those energies and then to both take them in and work with them and have them to access throughout the rest of the year as we go more into darkness after summer solstice. And the first thing that we were going to suggest was something that you were going to talk to them about, which was a sun tea, I believe.
Yes, so some sunny day, put on a bit of sunblock so you don't get sunburned. But if you want to take your interpretation of the Sun card a bit further and get more in touch with its energies and go beyond the sort of happy keyword, like relaxed, sunny, some sun tea might be in order, which you just take. You need a big, clear jar. You're going to add cold water. This is a recipe for solstice sun tea. Cold water, one whole washed orange sliced into chunks, a half a lemon washed and cut into chunks, 4 tea bags of whichever tea, green tea, black tea, whatever you like. And you're going to add it to the 2-quart glass jar. Also, 1/3 to 1/2 cup of agave nectar or honey. My recommendation is for honey, personally. Place the fruit in the jar, add water, add tea bags, put the lid tightly on the jar, let it sit in full sunlight for 2 hours, remove the tea bags, mix in the agave or honey, and then park yourself out where you also can get a bit of the sunlight, get some of that vitamin D, get that solar energy. Pour yourself a nice tall glass of the sun tea, maybe with some ice, and take out your sun card and sip the sun tea and imagine that the energy of the sun, the light of the rays of the sun that have penetrated the sun tea and created a fun alchemical mixture just for you, are going to be entering your body and you're going to be receiving information from the sun. Just open your mind to the expectation that this beverage is going to enhance your experience of solar energy. You can even hold a crystal, either maybe a citrine or a sunstone, or gold calcite might be especially appropriate stones, especially that citrine. Energy is so positive and drives out darkness. Maybe spend some time with the crystal cupped in one hand, the tarot card sitting in your lap, and a nice glass of sun tea in your other hand, and just be aware of new thoughts about the sun card that come to you from that experience.
And I think, you know, letting the sun speak to you, because we often hear about people doing meditation, and usually they do meditations in the dark or in a very low light, or you hear a lot of people do like moon rituals and that kind of thing.
And or guided meditation.
Yes, and I think that sometimes doing that in the sun is often neglected because people think they have to wait until night or they have to do it under the full moon or, you know, that kind of thing. Mm. And I think it's a very different energy that you're sitting under when you're under the sun, and it can bring you very different experiences, very different insights. So, you know, it's good that you're encouraging people to sit out in the sun with this and then do your meditation or visualization or contemplation or just listen to the sun. You know, and the sun, you know, for me, Kemetic, of course, the sun, God, Ra, the sun is the source of life. And so when we're accessing that, when we're sitting under that, when we're contemplating that, we're really returning to that source of life, and it's helping to bring us back to our source to help us gain the enlightenment we need to move forward and to bring perhaps new life to ourselves or to something in our lives at that time. Now, once they've made their tea, and of course I would also encourage people, if they wanted to make their own herbal blend and look up some herbs that are very that correlate very strongly with the energies of the sun, then you could also do that. And then you could also use that same herbal mixture throughout the year to continue tapping into the energy of the sun, even though it's not at its peak brightness at a different time of the year. Mm-hmm. And so another thing that they might think about doing while drinking that tea, we often hear of a gratitude practice, and I'm going to encourage people to do an empowerment practice because the sun is very much about confidence and courage and pride and ego in a good way, because it's what motivates us to go out into the world and accomplish and do what it is we want to do and to not be afraid to be ourselves. So an empowerment practice, what you would do is you would take a jar. Now, maybe you use the same jar that you just made your sun tea in, but you want to dry it out. You want it to be clear, so either a clear jar or a clear bowl. And then I would encourage you to get yellow paper, if you can, and then cut that into strips. And each day, either you can choose the time, I would say perhaps at the end of the day is probably the best time to do this. The end of the day, you take, I would say, 1 to 3 strips of paper, and you write down one to three things that you did in that day that were successful, that you accomplished, that you did well. And these are not things that you're writing down that you did but you think you can do better. It's things where you're really thinking about and highlighting what it is you did well, period. And this will start to create, especially if you do this on a daily basis, this will start to create a sense of focusing on and recognizing those things that we do, that we accomplish, that we're successful at, rather than always being more focused, which I think we fall into the trap of things that I wish I could have done that better, or being judgmental or critical about things. And maybe while you write those down, you can be sipping on some of that sun tea, because certainly you save that sun tea. You don't have to drink the whole jar of it in one sitting. you know, but the nice thing is you then put those strips into the jar, into the bowl, and over a period of time, you see that jar or that bowl of empowerment filling up. And it is a physical reminder, a visible reminder of how you are filling up with greater confidence and courage. And I would suggest perhaps on the last Sunday of the month, let's say, because ultimately that jar is going to get full, or that bowl is going to get full, but you could do this on a regular basis. Perhaps on the last Sunday of each month, in the middle of the day under a bright sun, and even if it's the middle of the day and it's cloudy, that's okay because the sun is still there. But take that jar of little strips of papers and burn them somewhere. Because one, you're burning them, you're tapping into the fire of the sun. Two, as you burn them, they go up in smoke and ash, and so they're kind of returning back up to the sun as they kind of float or the smoke goes up. And you are clearing away the old, kind of a purging by fire. You're clearing away the old by transmuting the energy of what was into new energy to become something else, and opening up space, just like the jar or bowl is now empty, opening up space for new opportunities, for new things to come in, and for new ways for you to see yourself in a very positive light.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm really glad you brought up that idea, you know, being aware about self-judgment that can come from this. I know that when people are working with this sort of sun energy, they're thinking about their most idealized self, the one they wish they saw in the mirror. And it's very easy to get into this idea that there's a perfect you archetype somewhere and that you are a pale imitation of that. And the energy of the sun card is all about, you're fine the way you are. Like, you know, you're just great. Calm down. So I'm
right.
Glad you brought that up.
And that's why, for me, it brings you back to the source, because ultimately that source of light is from within you. So it's reminding you and bringing you back to, it's not about some idealized self that's out here somewhere. It's bringing you back to, no, this already is within you. This potential resides within you. You just have to turn your gaze from looking outward back to inward and see it, and then stoke it in order for it to be able to shine forth, rather than thinking there's something outside of you that's going to make it shine for you.
Mm.
So we will post these on our Facebook page so that you have those to reference if you would like to make the tea, or if you wanted to try this empowerment practice but didn't necessarily get down all of the different little aspects and things that I had mentioned. And so feel free to check there, and we will make sure that it is on there for you to have as a reference. So with that, Charlie, I think that first I will remind people, if you'd like a reading, we'll be doing those later in the show, and you can Skype in or call 646-716-5510 to get in the queue. And perhaps now, since we are at our full, shiny, brightest selves, we can go forward in the show with great pride and allow our guest to come on, and we will put him in the spotlight and see what enlightening and illuminating things he has to share with us. How does that sound?
Wonderful. That sounds delicious.
Excellent. Then here we go.
Firefly Willows, LIVE, we're working hard to be your trusted source for fun, enlightening, and heart-centered information and community. And we're passionate about the art of transformative media, the new leading edge of communication in our highly connected, media-rich world. If you're passionate about facilitating change, and you have gifts or ideas you'd like to share, come join us, host a show, or be a guest. Or connect us to an amazing speaker or teacher whose message is too good to miss. There's always room for courageous, knowledgeable changemakers, inspired artists, and new ideas. Let us know you're interested. Send an email to info@fireflywillows.com. We're Firefly Willows, LIVE, helping you find and shine your inner light.
Oh.
This month, the Amethyst Oracle welcomes guest Lee Burson, a professional tarot reader who has been working with the tarot and astrology for over 25 years. Lee Burson wrote the book for the Universal Marseille Tarot Deck, the Zodiac Tarot, as well as the Tarot of Dreams by Ciro Marchetti. He is perhaps best known as the creator of the Gay Tarot, published in 2004 by Los Garabeo. The Gay Tarot was a milestone deck because it was the first gay-themed tarot deck released by a mainstream publisher. So please join Charlie and High C in welcoming to the Amethyst Oracle, Lee Burston.
Well, welcome to the show, Lee. Thank you for joining us today on the Amazon.
Thank you.
Great to have you on. Been a big
fan for having me
for a few years now, and really excited to find out more about it. So tell us, how did you come to tarot? How did this all happen to you?
Well, the first thing in my life that I can remember tarot related is I remember as a child there was a Rider-Waite deck in the home. I have some trouble with placing exactly when this might have been and what edition it must have been, because I know that the U.S. Games Rider-Waite didn't come out until the early 70s, and my memory seems to go back before then, so maybe it was a prior edition. But so it was around the house, and I don't remember doing really anything much with it. But however, when I was in my teens, I remember I was in a bookstore in New York City, where I lived, and I saw a set that was made up of all three of Eden Gray's paperback books together with a U.S. Games Rider-Waite deck. And I bought that, and that was my first real exposure to tarot. And then I sort of played around with it on and off over the years. When Rachel Pollack's set came out, 78 Degrees of Wisdom, that was another real step forward for me. When I stumbled across Sally Nichols' book about the Marseille deck, that was really my first introduction to anything other than modern decks. And so that was pretty exciting for me too. But it wasn't until the 90s when I really started to get into it in a big way. And instead of going off and on with it from then on, it was just always on. One of my big interests as a teenager was the theater, which is something that somebody might have guessed from looking at the Gay Tarot itself. I did a lot of community theater in New York, and that probably had a big effect on me as a person and how I relate to people and how I relate to creative projects. I pretty much did clerical type work as I became an adult, and eventually landed in the legal field, where I provide support services for attorneys. And in the late 90s, I started contributing tarot reviews of decks to what was at that time called Michelle's Tarot Page, which is now called Tarot Passages. And I wrote many, many, many reviews, probably wrote more than most people are even interested in reading, but it was fun for me to, you know, express myself in that way. And in one of them, I just happened to mention that I was gay. I wasn't trying to make a big statement about it, but it in the context of the review, it seemed to a logical thing for me to mention. And it was a Los Garabeo deck, and Ricardo Minetti, who is an editor at Los Garabeo, saw that, and he must have kept it in mind, because when they, at Los Garabeo, they had an editorial meeting and decided they wanted to do a gay deck, and he remembered and wrote me an email asking me if I would be interested in creating a deck, which was just unbelievable for me to have a major deck publisher actually contact me and ask me. So the fact that, you know, if it's true that I'm pigeonholed, it doesn't bother me in the slightest bit, because it was because of being gay that I even had the opportunity, an opportunity which I was very grateful for and still I am.
Excellent. So Ricardo, so he reached out to you and told you that he wanted to have you work on this gay tarot deck. What were your thoughts? Where did you want to go with that?
After picking myself up off the floor, the first thing I wanted to know was, well, what did they have in mind? And I asked him, and his response was, well, they really didn't have anything in mind. They wanted to see what I could come up with. So the first thing that I decided was that I wanted it to be a gay male deck. And the reason for that is, well, there were a few reasons. First of all, I felt that it would be presumptuous for me to speak to the lesbian experience since I don't experience that firsthand. Secondly, I felt that there was a lot of a woman-centered perspective or a feminine perspective already in the modern tarot world. And so I felt that a deck specifically focusing on gay men would be different and unusual and interesting. And it's certainly something that I felt I could bring more of a personal perspective to. And so when I let Ricardo know about all that, it was fine with him. So then I set about thinking about what approach I was going to take and what was going to be on each card.
Excellent. And did you know who the artist would be right away? Or
I did not. Rick basically told me how it would work. They have a stable, so to speak, of artists.
I'm picturing an actual stable now, by the way,
right.
Where they go out and they give them oats.
Right. Not to mean that in a pejorative way, but
no, it's okay.
These are all Italian artists who are there in Italy. And so he couldn't even tell me who it was going to be at that point. Later on in the, I think I had finished my work on it and submitted it to him. And then that's when they chose which artist it would be. It was interesting because usually when we think about deck creation, we think about a real collaboration between the artist and the author, if those are two different people. In this case, there really was no direct contact between Antonella Platano, the artist, and I, for the basic reason that she's Italian and I'm American and we don't share a language. So basically, if Antonella had any questions, she would relay them to Rick, who would then relay it to me, and Rick was sort of the go-between. So I had to be very careful when I wrote the card descriptions of what was going to be on each card. I tried to be as specific as possible, and while at the same time allowing her some artistic freedom. So we didn't have this back and forth that I'm sure happens on most decks when they're created. But on the other hand, the positive side of that was that when the art was finished and I saw it for the first time, it was so exciting to see, you know, what I had sort of vaguely imagined in my non-artist's mind. To see it there on my computer screen was just tremendously, tremendously thrilling. And Antonella did such a wonderful job. I mean, I can't describe how thrilled I was when I first saw the cards, the card images.
Were there any cards that especially surprised you as far as the first time?
It surprised me. She added some things which were absolutely perfect. And I was surprised at that. I was surprised, not that she added it, but I was surprised at how well her additions worked. I remember there was one card where it was kind of different than I had envisioned, not in terms of what was on the card, but in terms of just the composition of it and what the eye focused on. And I did actually mention it to Rick, and he explained to me that they have it in their contract that they can, with the artist, that they can request a certain number of card changes, but they prefer not to do that because they don't want the artist to have to do that extra work. And so I just really let it go. It wasn't that big a deal to me. And I was so happy with the rest of the deck that I felt maybe this is serendipity and this is actually the difference that I saw between my mind's eye and what was actually ended up on the card, that maybe that difference was actually a good difference, and perhaps I should, you know, go with the flow. Going with the flow might have a better result than my stamping my feet and insisting on a change. And I'm glad I went that direction. I think it was good karma.
Right on. It's kind of interesting. That's sort of how we're finding out, I think, more and more about how Arthur Waite and Pamela Coleman Smith collaborated on the Rider Waite. I think in the beginning we all assumed that, you know, he was standing over her shoulder as she was painting, but
right.
In really reading what he wrote, you actually kind of realize that for the most part she was kind of on her own working with his script.
I think she was, you know, it's so interesting. I think he was directing her more when we're talking about the major cards, but when it comes to the minor cards, I think he pretty much let her go her own way. And I think there's internal evidence for that, because if you read his book, his descriptions for some of the minor cards, he kind of lays out four or five different alternatives as to what the card might mean. And then the picture follows up on one of them maybe, but not the others.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really kind of get the feeling that she received this text and then just did what she, what, how she felt, did it how she felt she would prefer it. And he didn't really have that much to say about it. But, you know, it's a mystery, though. We only have, you know, these little clues as to how they went about their work.
Very cool.
I'm sure it would surprise them to know that we would even be thinking or talking about such things so many years after they did it.
100 years later.
Right.
And once the deck was out, what kind of reactions have you gotten from people? I mean, have you had people say, you know, it's too gay, it's not gay enough, it's too white, it's not this, or it's too much of that? Or did you find kind of more of an acceptance and excitement simply because it was something that maybe hadn't really been portrayed before?
It seems to me that it got a whole range of reactions. And I completely understand why. The approach that I took to making the deck was that after thinking about it, I realized that the only way I could approach it was to make it a personal deck. Because when you have a deck with a theme, you know, usually it's a cultural theme, you know, or a period in history. And there's really no controversy about it. Just a question of how you're going to apply those particular cultural elements or historical elements to the deck. But with something like gayness, there is no one particular gay culture. There are gay cultures, but they change and they're fluid, and there's so many of them, and some people are part of one culture or another culture. Some people don't feel like they're a part of any culture really. And so there's no way that one person could create a gay deck which all gay people are going to say, wow, this really resonates with me. Mm-hmm. So I expected that there were going to be some people who said, wow, this is great, and other people who said, this doesn't reflect my experience at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it completely understandable to me. I think there were a few people who were disappointed that it wasn't basically a Rider-Waite deck, but with the straight couples replaced by same-sex couples. And, you know, I could have done the deck that way, but it seems to me a very interesting project. I couldn't imagine doing something like that. It seemed to me that if one is going to create a deck, you might as well go all the way and make it as creative and as interesting and as expressive of yourself as possible, rather than simply filling in the blanks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there is a card, the Ten of Cups, actually is an example of what such a deck would have been, because that's exactly what that deck is. It's the Rider-Waite Ten of Cups, but with the man and the woman replaced by two men. So I kind of put that in there just as a, you know, just to sort of give a taste of what it might have been, but wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, here you go.
Right. Some people felt that it was not gay enough, and I can understand. Because my particular experience has not been a particularly radical one, so I didn't put you know, a lot of what one might consider radical things in the deck. And mm-hmm. and so I think that for some people, it may seem kind of bland. I tried to focus on the outer world, not rather than the inner world. Mm-hmm. I tried to show, because it's my feeling that gay people as portrayed in media today, and this is getting a lot better, obviously, and it's even gotten better in the 9 years since the deck came out. But there's a lot of stereotypes. There's an awareness of gay people as something other or something separate or apart or living in a kind of a media ghetto, so to speak, mm-hmm. where they're not a part of the life that, quote, normal people are living. And I wanted to combat that. I wanted to show that gay people are a part of life. Sexuality is a part of life. Sexuality is a part of straight people's lives. Sexuality is a part of gay people's lives, but not the whole part. And so I wanted to show gay people participating in what straight people think of as normal life,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
And do you think that that was influenced? Because I think that I've seen that you really didn't at least come into consciousness of being gay until your early 20s.
That's right.
And, you know, do you think that that maybe played into that idea behind the creation of the deck? Because it's kind of that, to me, it's that thing of, you know, for somebody who's young, if they're able to see portrayals of things that make them feel like, oh, who I am or what I'm feeling is normal, or I'm not the only one, or it's not just some weird sex thing, it's also, you know, a firefighter, a doctor, whatever, that it can
exactly.
help in that process of coming to awareness and or acceptance of that earlier on. So do you think that maybe a deck like this can actually be helpful in that process for younger people or just anyone who is struggling to come to that acceptance or consciousness in themselves?
I would like to think so, because that was really the one basic idea that I had as I was creating all the cards. I don't want it to seem like I was preaching or trying to communicate a message. I mean, what it is a tarot deck, and I'd like it to be able to be used, as a tarot deck. But I did want to have that consciousness behind it. I wanted young people to be able to look at it and say to themselves, wow, these are strong, positive depictions of gay people participating in life in a positive way, rather than a lot of what I saw, especially growing up in the 80s and 90s. What I was seeing in the media was a lot of things which really were not very positive, at least from my perspective. And that's another reason why I took care to include children in a lot of the images as well, because obviously children are gay or will be gay. Gay people have children.
What?
I know, shocker, right? But again, in the 80s, when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, you didn't hear about gay people having children,
mm-hmm.
or either children of their own or adopting children. That's something which just wasn't a part of the public consciousness at all. So to me, that was a big concern of mine. Since I thought this was probably going to be one of the few commercial mainstream productions of a gay tarot deck for several years, I wanted it to be something positive for gay people, and especially for young gay people.
And it may also serve the same purpose, because you veered away from kind of just reinterpreting the traditional imagery of, like, say, the Waite Smith deck, that it also, a lot of your imagery takes away, not in a bad way, but just isn't quite so woo-woo, esoteric, new-agey, the way some people think of Tarot. And so it makes it something that's more accessible to people and shows Tarot doesn't have to just be some woo-woo, new-agey thing. It also is something that's very related to everyday life and what you see around you.
Mm-hmm.
That's true, and that reflects, you know, one particular interest of mine when it comes to tarot, is that I do believe that I'm interested in the whole esoteric side of it, but it seems to me that Well, I was influenced a lot, I think, by the Voyager deck, where the creator of that deck, James Wanless, really went out of his way to portray tarot as something that could be part of everyday life without the esoteric and occult associations. Mark McElroy is a tarot author who has really stressed that as well.
Mm-hmm.
His line is no focus on hocus pocus. And I like that as well. So while I do like exploring the whole esoteric side of it, I also like the idea that people who aren't interested in that or aren't knowledgeable about that can still pick up a deck and get something out of it without all of that baggage.
I like that for the most part, a lot of the typically mythological figures in a traditional tarot deck have been replaced with like experiences that people can relate to in the gay world. Like, for example, the tower being like coming out, you know, which, you know, your deck gets revelation, and the devil, which I had to sit with this one for a while before I made peace with this particular one, but I really love it now. I really do. The self-hatred card of like internalized homophobia. The young man looking at the picture of the nuclear family, and that originally I was younger then, Lee. But was that an intentional thing to replace most of the mythical beings with more human experiences?
Yes, exactly. I really felt that all of the ideas and the concepts and the feelings that are in a traditional tarot deck, I feel we don't need the esoteric clothing on those cards in order to, and in fact, I think in some cases, we might be able to understand or absorb those ideas and concepts and feelings perhaps better without the esoteric clothing. So that, you know, so that we can see how we can experience those things in terms of present day symbolism. Now, symbolism is an interesting topic, because does a symbol have to be of some medieval fairy tale in order to be a successful symbol? So I guess I'm saying no, it really doesn't. An automobile can be a symbol. A subway train can be a symbol. And just why can't those things be just as powerful a symbol as, you know, a sword or a lion or something?
I remember when I was having a hard time with the self-hatred card and thinking, like, I don't know about this, you wrote on a forum, when you're reading tarot for someone and you get the devil card, like, do you tell the client that, like, they're going to see a big hairy monster? Like, you don't, right? You go someplace more, you know, so I thought, okay, I get it. Like, I see where you're going.
And the devil can mean different things to different people. To me, the devil has always meant, well, some obsessive thought that probably isn't good for us, you know.
Yeah.
Some unhealthily obsessive mode of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is this when translated into, a theme of a gay deck?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for me, it made perfect sense to say, okay, this is the unhealthily obsessive thought that, and, you know, fortunately, hopefully, fewer gay people have those thoughts now than, you know, 10 or 20 or 30 years ago. But still, I'm sure there's plenty of people who do still have those thoughts. I think for any minority, self-hatred is an issue.
Yeah.
You know, perhaps my deck might be accused of being, you know, preachy or goody-goody or whatever. But I tried, at least in a few cards, not to shy away from some of the more difficult issues. Another card that has some difficult issues is the Justice card, where instead of simply portraying a symbol of justice, I took a rather bitter view of it and showed justice in a negative way, because there are still, you know, many places on this planet where if you express your sexuality, you'll be thrown in jail or worse. You know, these things are part of ourselves. These things are part of human nature. I didn't want to turn a blind eye towards difficult issues as well as positive issues.
So do you think that this is a deck that could easily be used or related to by non-gay people, especially by non-gay men, whether it's straight or lesbian women or straight men or questioning men?
I'd like to think so. I would be really interested in seeing, you know, a breakdown, although I'm sure no such breakdown exists. But to know of the people that bought the deck, how many were gay men, how many were straight men, how many were gay or straight women. I think that there is a market among straight women for gay male-related media.
Increasingly so.
They're the highest percentage of people who purchase gay male fiction and mm-hmm. erotica in that market.
I would definitely believe that. And I know, I remember reading that the audience for the TV show Queer as Folk was a large percentage of that audience was straight women.
Mm-hmm. Little thing I do when I'm over on a tarot or an eclectic tarot forum, I do, like when there's someone new posting, I will look through their deck list and see if the gay tarot is there. And mainly to see if the guy is gay. I do that. It's a really great trick. Because I don't know many gay guys who don't have it. And
Charlie's always cruising.
That's right. You know, that's what I'm really here for. But actually, I've noticed a lot of women have it. So a lot of women have that deck on their list.
I think so. And that's fine. You know, I couldn't be happier. Since it is a tarot deck, you know, there's another reason for straight women to have the deck also, which is simply so that they can have something which their gay clients might enjoy being read with.
Mm-hmm.
As far as straight men, I'm probably guessing that most straight men probably wouldn't buy it. But I would be happy to be proved wrong.
Right on.
But, you know, if it wasn't called the Gay Tarot, the majority of the cards, if you just looked at them, wouldn't necessarily say gay. You know, it's just showing a person or people. I mean, there's a few, I mean, you know, two men in bed. Okay, maybe we could make the assumption that there might be a gay tarot. But maybe somebody just tripped. but for the most part, many of these images aren't like so obviously gay. Unlike a lot of the gay decks, which tend to go more towards sexualizing the imagery,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
it would be difficult not to make the assumption. this I think could be picked up by somebody, and if they didn't know it was called the Gay Tarot, they may not make the immediate assumption that it's an all-gay deck, even though they may come across some images that are.
I think that's true, and in fact, I do seem to recall somebody on the Eclectic Forum posting and saying exactly that she had used it for straight male clients without telling them that this was a gay deck, and getting a very positive reaction, you know, because it simply wasn't, because she didn't tell them that, it wasn't seen as that, and it worked out very well. Yeah. So I'm not sure what that says. Maybe I didn't make it gay enough.
Straight men are oblivious.
I think what it says is that you made it showing that being gay is a very, very broad spectrum of experience and is mm-hmm. very much a human experience like everyone else has, rather than some specific, very defined, very limited and narrow way of being, living, and seeing the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope so.
Something that a structure in your deck that I thought was really interesting that has nothing to do with being gay. your ace through 10 minors correspond to the majors in a kind of really creative way. Could you talk about how that came about?
Well, I was really completely confused about what exactly I would put on the minors. I really had no idea because, I mean, nothing about the deck's theme seemed to help me in figuring out what to put on the minors.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought about putting scenes that didn't have people in them. You know, all kinds of crazy schemes went through my mind. And finally, I wrote to Rick and I asked him, I said, you know, I presented him a few different options. And one of the options I presented him was I could visually have scenes which visually evoke the Rider-Waite minors, but the meanings wouldn't necessarily be the same. because I did want to have this correlation between the number of the major card and the number of the minor card. And Rick responded positively to that idea, and so that's what I did. And so what you have in the minor cards is you've got a scene which sort of looks like the corresponding Rider-Waite card, but that takes its meaning mostly from the correspondingly numbered major card. So I kind of sneakily did two things at once there. You know, I got to include my numerical scheme while at the same time having an image which might be more familiar with people, so that they wouldn't have to be looking at images that had completely nothing to do with the Rider-Waite. And I think it worked out pretty well.
It's pretty cool, and especially because it's sort of like, what does the High Priestess do when not being the High Priestess, you know, or or the intuitive in your deck. So can we just take a look at maybe one, like the Lovers, for example. You have the two gentlemen and the Lovers card and that passionate, dynamic, kind of cosmic connection, but then you have the four sixes in the deck where they also appear, and I think it was Mary Greer who said, like, sixes are, I'm almost quoting her, the sixes are about relationships and sometimes unequal relationships. Could you kind of talk about how you went from the sixness of, married to each of the suits, and took that couple out of that, off the pedestal of the Lover's card and into the reality of their lives in the minors?
Sure. Well, first of all, I mean, the obvious thing is I took the couple that's shown on the Lover's card, mm-hmm. and... I took that couple and put them on each of the four sixes. It shows them each in different aspects of their lives. So the Six of Cups shows the two in a particularly happy emotional moment. One of them presenting the other with a Christmas gift in bed, mm-hmm. And with the Six of Coins. So coins have to do with the material world. So we see the same couple dealing with, in this case, literally dealing with money. They're at a bank. One of them is a bank teller. The other is withdrawing money.
In my mind, this is how they met, by the way.
Sure. You could also take it in a more metaphorical way. You know, they're not necessarily literally a bank teller and a customer, but that at certain times in their relationship, like you were speaking about Mary Greer's comment about possibly unequal relationships. Perhaps in this relationship, they are unequal financially, and mm-hmm. and one has to rely on the other for financial help or whatever. And perhaps they rely on each other and for material things, but it shifts. You know, certain material things one person supplies and other material things the other person supplies. And so it shows an interesting dynamic there in the relationship. In the Six of Swords, it's a sort of a quiet scene where they're in a canoe going down a river. It looks like maybe in a park or something. And, it's sort of a pensive mood. Interesting for swords, because swords are supposed to be for not only for thoughts but communications. But in this card, they're not really communicating. They're just sort of more
in paradise.
They could be troubled, or they could be simply existing together and enjoying a quiet moment. You know, maybe engaging in introspection. But it's nice if you're going to be navel gazing. It's kind of nice to do it when there's somebody next to you.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, that particular card is a good example because you can see very clearly that it's the same cast of characters, but in a less exalted setting, more real world kind of setting.
Mm-hmm. Similar along those lines, I'm also curious how you decided to name the court cards the way that you did, by doing youth, man, guide, and sage. Is there kind of a hierarchy there, the kind of how we see in some of the other decks, or how did you come about deciding on what to call them?
I think I was probably influenced there by the Voyager Tarot, where I think it's man, woman, sage, and child, I think.
Right.
I think probably in my mind, I didn't have so much an idea of hierarchy. I know the hierarchy of the court cards is something which is pretty standard. But for this deck, I really wasn't focused so much on a hierarchy per se. I had a real problem with the queens because I didn't want, because I was focusing on men. I wanted it to be a male deck, so I didn't want to show women as the queens. I felt it would be too campy to show, you know, men in drag. Although I have to say, I really love the moon card in the Cosmic Tribe Tarot.
Mm-hmm.
If you're familiar with that, it's just a wonderful card. It's a man in drag as the moon, and it creates a great feeling of it's radical, but it's also it's beautiful. It's just it's beyond my powers to describe, but it's a beautiful card. But that's exactly the kind of thing which I think is great in a tarot deck, but not something that I felt that I could really put in a deck and be true to myself, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So that option was out. And so what I decided to do, since it's a very mundane deck, since there's so much in it of, you know, the actual physical world that we're in, I thought that I would use the queens as an opportunity to add in some more spiritual perspective. So I took out the queens and replaced them with the guides, which are sort of angelic characters.
I have my pet theory about that, and I wanted to run it past you before you told more about that, which was that in the progression we have your youth and your man, I saw the guides as like in a spiritual awakening that happens between just being an adult male and being a true like sage and elder in the community. And so for me, the queens kind of represent in each of their suits that sort of inner initiation or powerful sort of awakening experience, the spiritual contact, the mystical experience that can happen. But am I way off base?
No, as a matter of fact, before we start our conversation, I was looking through the deck. That very same concept did strike me, and it had never really hit me that way before, except the only difference is it seemed to me that the guide would, instead of being between the man and the sage, the guide would actually would represent the transition from the youth to the man. So that, in other words, in order to attain a degree of adulthood and maturity in the world, one has to start to become aware of the more spiritual aspects. But it could work just as easily in the way that you said. And I think that's a great idea.
Well, Charlie had mentioned his theory to me, and it made sense having the guide there, because I thought about, you know, like the youth is when we're growing up and going to school, and then we become a man and we start to establish our family, our career, etc. Then we shift to being a guide, which is like we're advanced in our career, so now we're helping to train other people in that, you know, career. Or we are now moved into a director or a VP kind of level, and so now we're guiding people that are now in positions we used to be in their career development. Then we become the sage, like once we retire, now we're on the board of directors.
Sure.
You
know, so. Absolutely. And or another possibility is you could put the guide, if you really wanted a very spiritual perspective, you could put the guide at the end of the sequence. So that...
Well, let's be careful there. You said you don't want to be too radical. Let's not go on doing that.
Oh, I like it.
With the guide at the end of the sequence, then you have sort of a whole life story there, and with the guide being what continues after, you know, after death, I suppose.
Right. Ascension, transcendence, enlightenment, becoming an angel.
Sure. And then you could draw a circle and say, well, then after the sage and then after the guide, then it's the youth that comes next, and a whole new story starts.
And I want to give you some serious kudos for the amount of diversity that is in this deck, because there's the age diversity that until I saw this deck, I never realized how like non-distinct 30-something all tarot decks seem to be, and you've got your elders here, and also the racial diversity, and you're showing Black people, Asian people in the modern world. So was that how did you approach that?
Well, one reason I did that was because I did feel that there was a lack of that kind of diversity in modern decks. another reason I did it was because I was basically excluding half of the world's population by not having any women in the deck. So to sort of make up for that, I thought it would be nice to show diversity in other ways. And I really do feel, I mean, if a deck is going to be set in modern times, then there really is no reason for everybody to be white. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So I did feel strongly about that. And what I did was, this may sound kind of mechanical, but I actually broke down the cards numerically and had a list in my head of four or five or six different ethnic backgrounds. And I assigned them to the cards evenly so that there wouldn't be a predominance of one over the other. But I also did it randomly.
Oh, I was going to ask you that. Like, did...
Right. I didn't want to use ethnicity as a symbol.
Okay.
I wanted to have variety in ethnicity, but the last thing I wanted to do was use ethnicity as a symbol, because to me, that's just stereotyping all over again.
Mm-hmm.
As you were saying about the Viking on the ship, or the or an African person, or a black person in an African village.
Yeah, I appreciate that, because in some decks, that little inclusion can come off as very weird. For example, the Sexual Magic Tarot, of all things, has one black person in the entire deck, and he's a man who's cheating with a white woman, and her husband is coming behind him with an axe. And I'm like, if you were going to put one black person in the deck, this was not the way. Or similarly, maybe the Morgan Greer, there's just one black person, or dark-skinned figure in the entire deck, and I'm like, it comes off as being like, ooh, she's exotic.
Yes, she's exotic, that's right.
I feel with this, where the Chariot and the Stars, like, there's nothing about them that is, like, blaxploitation-esque about it, he happens to be the Star,
Yeah, and the first kind of symbolism that this deck does away with is gender symbolism, mm-hmm. Which is kind of the whole point of the deck. And I also, while I was at it, I thought I'd do away with ethnic symbolism at the same time, because it just doesn't seem to me to, especially in a deck where it's set in the modern world, it really doesn't seem to me to belong.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if somebody said to you, okay, what would be your ideal deck? You describe your ideal deck, and zap, here it is. What would you put? And those were two things that would have been in my ideal deck. And since I had the opportunity, which most people don't have, but fortunately I had that opportunity to do exactly that. So I thought I might as well take advantage of it.
Now, I'd like to ask you a question. What would you say is the role of the tarot reader or the diviner in today's world? Like what used to be the role of the medicine man or the medicine woman in times gone by? What was the role of the tarot reader or the witch in times gone by for the community or in society? And then how has that morphed, and what do we see our role as tarot readers today in serving the community and the world?
Sure. To me, the basic thing that's going on in a tarot reading is the same whether we're reading for ourselves or reading for another, and that is that the random selection of symbols and the human mind's ability to take a random selection of symbols and make a story out of them, and the cathartic benefit that we get out of doing that exercise, to me, that's what's really going on in a reading. This is, and what makes a reading valuable, the insight that we can get. Our minds love to travel down the same roads every day. It's like the same ruts. We have our map that's in our heads, and we go down the same paths that the way those maps are constructed. And so we see everything through that map. We see everything through the same ways that we habitually think of things. So what tarot does by presenting us with a random selection of symbols, when we put those symbols together into a story, which is a wonderful capability that the human mind has, doing so for some reason, somehow, that act seems to bypass those same well-worn ruts that we tend to think in. And that's why, in my mind, that's why the act of doing a tarot reading is so insightful and so valuable. So when we do it for ourselves, we're connecting the symbols together into a story, and that will show us something that we wouldn't otherwise have thought of about our situation. And it's the same thing when we read for somebody else. We're putting that story together, combining it with the client's actual situation, and it becomes an interesting, cathartic, and insightful experience for both the reader and the client. And, you know, there's a whole other way of looking at card reading, which is that you're actually telling the future. I guess I don't really see it that way, although I certainly do like to experiment with fortune telling and with actually seeing if we can literally divine the future in the cards. But it's always seemed to me that in the end, a reading for insight is just going to be more immediately helpful than simply trying to read the future. If we're looking specifically for insight, we can get that immediately. It's instant gratification.
Mm. So you had mentioned Rachel Pollack and 78 Degrees of Wisdom, and one of the things that she has kind of really developed and championed is this idea of wisdom readings. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you might be willing to do a wisdom reading for this question by pulling a card and asking the tarot, what is the role of the tarot reader in today's world?
Oh, that's a great question. Let me get my deck together and I will pull a card and see what comes up. We have the Three of Coins. Mm. Now, the Three of Coins shows a young man on a stepladder painting his daughter's or his sister's room. And she is helping.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly a very domestic scene. And I guess this is how I would see what the reader is doing. When you're reading for somebody else, this is what you're doing, basically. You're painting a picture for them, but you're not just painting a picture for them that they're looking at and then don't ever think about again. If it's a good reading, if it's an effective reading, in a way you're helping them to create a new room for themselves, so to speak.
Mm.
So, you know, we're basically saying painting the room is an analogy. You, the reader, are sort of collaborating with the client to paint their room, to maybe change how they see things so that they can be more effective in their own lives.
And I think there's something important to what you just said there, is that the role of the reader is to be a collaborator, that it's a collaborative process. It's not just the reader doing or saying, this is what it is, this is what you do.
Absolutely. And, you know, in the card, he's painting her room. He's not painting his own room. It's something that she's going to live in. It's for her. So it's collaborative in a way. He's doing, you know, he's doing the heavy lifting in the card, but ultimately it's for her.
And she's there to say, no, let's make it a little bit lighter shade of this, or, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
It's not just he comes in and says, I've painted your room, deal with whatever I decided.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And he's used some Martha Stewart technique to create those cloud effects with fun painting. So that's what the gay reader can offer. When we paint that room, it's going to be gorgeous.
That's right.
Wonderful. Thank you. So if people might know you for the Gay Tarot, but you have a few other accolades to speak of. You wrote one of the only Marseille companion books in English.
Yes, I was. After the Gay Tarot came out, I had already been interested in Marseille decks, and I had been studying them and working with them and reading about them for quite a while. And I had been wanting to write a book, and I couldn't really figure out a way to approach it. And finally, it came to me one way that I could approach it that would be maybe a little bit different. And so I wrote Rick, and Rick responded that it just so happened that they were coming out with a Marseille deck and they needed a book for it, and so this would be a perfect opportunity. He gave me a word limit of the number of words it could be. And so I sat down and I wrote it. And it didn't really occur to me how small it would end up being until I actually saw the printed copy. It comes to 64 pages, so it's a small book. But you know, I worked very hard on it. When you write a book like that, you can't just dash things off the top of your head. When you're dealing with a book which is based on history, you really have to go over every single word and make sure that everything that you're writing has some reasonable source to it. I feel like I sweated over every word of it. So when it came out and I saw it was such a small book, I was kind of taken aback. But I'm still pleased with it, because even though it's small, I feel like I really said everything exactly the way I wanted to say it. And that's besides the Gay Tarot, that's my only other published project, which, you know, has consistently, every once in a while, I'll see a positive comment on it. And even now, after all these years. So I'm very happy about that it seems to have reached its audience. And then there were a few other projects which didn't meet with much notice at all. And that's okay too, you know. My publishing career has been a bit checkered, but you know, that's just fine. I'm just glad to have had the opportunity.
So that, you know, brings us up to the current moment in terms of what you've done in Tarot leading up to now. If you want to put on your predictor hat, how would you perhaps see where the role of Tarot is evolving and going, or what the Tarot is becoming in the next 5 to 10 years?
I think that we're going to continue to see, you know, huge numbers of new decks. You know, the number of decks that comes out just seems to be constantly increasing, and I think that's a good thing. That's a great thing. I don't see any really drastic new developments on the horizon for the tarot. You know, I guess the one thing that could have really been something new would be computer programs, that people doing readings on the computer screen or on mobile devices. But that doesn't seem, we've had that around for several years now, and it doesn't seem to have really changed the dynamic very much that I can see. So unless there were something vastly new in technology, you know, I suppose if you could have a deck of 78 cards and have the actual images on the cards change in some way, you know, that would be terrific. There'd be a lot of potential there for something really revolutionary, but I'm not sure if that's technologically viable at this stage.
And similar to what we just did a couple of minutes ago, do you want to pull a card and ask the Tarot where it sees itself going in the next 5 to 10 years, how it sees itself evolving?
Well, I came up with the Sage of Wands, who is... he seems to be a politician who has just won a victory. I guess I would see this card as saying that tarot is going to become seen more as an everyday tool, and perhaps it will continue to shed some of the esoteric baggage. Which I should say, it's not that I'm anti-esotericism. I do enjoy the esoteric aspects of it, but. But I do think that I do see a role for tarot in everyday life. And I guess I see this card as saying that tarot can indeed help us function better in everyday life, completely aside from its spiritual or esoteric underpinnings.
It also seems like in the public opinion, tarot will win victories. Like it will, for non-taroists, it might be seen more positively or more usefully, maybe. And I would like that. Just with that.
Me too.
With him, with the Sage of Wands, having that public victory.
Well, I think we've seen that, especially with people that you've mentioned, you know, James Wanless and Mark McElroy, you know, because what they really have done is take Tarot into the workplace and into the business and corporate world, and that would seem like the last place you would expect Tarot to either show up or be accepted or allowed to be used, yet they have found ways to bring it into their, in some ways by doing what you're saying, you know, de-emphasizing the esotericism of it and making it more of a practical tool, you know, and so maybe this is just indicating that that's coming to a greater maturity and fruition level of being able to incorporate it in that way in the world in a more mainstream or a more everyday kind of way.
Absolutely, and I think that stands as a testament to the enduring quality of just the structure of the tarot deck,
right,
and how truly universal that structure is. That basic set of images and the numerical structure, it lends itself well to esotericism, but it doesn't need the esotericism. It exists on its own and can be applied in endless ways to our lives. The deck is always being shuffled.
Ah, and I think that's the perfect saying to bring our conversation to a close.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I had a great time.
Thank you for joining us. I loved getting a behind-the-scenes look at one of my very favorite decks. So.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Lee.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
We've added to our lineup of lively, thought-provoking shows, but don't forget our original Sunday morning lineup at 10:30 a.m. Join us for Healing Conversations with Mildred Lynn McDonald every first Sunday. Revolution with Heisi Lutmers every second Sunday. Convergence with John Carosella every third Sunday. And our popular on-air call-in show, the fourth Sunday of every month. We're excited. Give us a listen as we continue to create new and entertaining ways for you to shine your inner light. Join us at Firefly Willows, LIVE.
And we are back. Hopefully you enjoyed our conversation that we just had with Lee Burston. And this is taking us into our regular monthly segment called Living the Queer Life. And
yes.
In this segment, Charlie and I pull a card to see how we can best live up to our full potential and be truly and fully ourselves in the world in the coming month. So,
yep.
Charlie, I believe you have a special deck that you have decided for us to use this month.
Yes, I'm using the Gods and Titans Oracle. It's from Blue Angel Publishing in Australia, and every single deck is a very hunky version of a male deity or hero or demigod, and they all look like they've spent thousands of years at the gym. So there's a companion deck, the Goddesses and Sirens Oracle. I have both. I love both. But for today's episode, Gods and Titans, and our card is... Okay, of course. For the solstice and for Pride Month, Achilles. And in this deck, Achilles, the Greek hero of the Trojan War, they gave him the keyword confidence. And in this deck, you can see Achilles vaulting into battle, leaping over soldiers, and just leaping right into the fray. And so confidence totally ties in with the sun, the solar energy. Just absolutely believe in yourself. Even if you're not sure why or that you should, just believe, you have to believe in what you're doing, or no one else will believe it either. And so living the queer life, just even though if you're different, whatever about you makes you feel different, makes you feel like maybe it's, if you're listening to this show, you might read tarot cards. And that might seem a little weird. Like, are they real? Am I kidding myself? Just be confident. I am this. I am doing this. And don't worry about that Achilles heel. So.
Well, and it also makes me think that, you know, first of all, Achilles is a warrior.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this may be a month with that sun energy of confidence and pride and even a little bit of ego, which says, be willing to go out into the world and go after what you want, that this is a time for being a warrior and perhaps mm-hmm. fighting for what you want, standing up to defend what you believe in, facing down injustice, you know, those kind of things. And it also strikes me because Achilles is a demigod. So he was the product of the union between a human and a god.
Mm-hmm.
And, or a goddess, but I was using the word very broadly there. And, you know, and I think that one thing that can also remind us in the coming month is that we have divinity within us, and therefore there is nothing that we can't do if we connect with that divine source that resides within us that can then serve as the fuel or the fire that takes us out into the world to accomplish things that we may not give our human self credit for, but when we see ourselves as possessing something that is more than human, we see that we have greater potential that we can fulfill or that we can do.
Absolutely. And, you know, you are divine. So go forth, be Achilles this month. You have our permission.
That's right. And maybe use that as an image or think about, do a little reading on Achilles and use that as a little reference for when you're sitting and visualizing or meditating under the sun with the sun tea.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, let's get to some readings for when there are some of our patient listeners.
All right. Well, I think I'm going to, it's a very momentary break, but I just need to get some water and grab my deck.
Cool.
And stay tuned, because coming up in just a minute, we will be having our call-in segment where you can receive a reading live on the air. If you would like to get in the queue for a reading, just call 646-716-5510, or you can Skype in from the show page. So we'll be back in just a minute to start taking your calls and hear what questions and guidance the Tarot has to offer. Stay tuned.
I love a boy named Jesse, but Jesse doesn't love me back. He says he has a girl in Chelsea.
That was by one of my favorite singers. That would be Ivry Leader. Ivry Leader from Israel.
Excellent.
Yes. In love with a boy named Jesse, who doesn't love him back. Sniffle.
Kind of like a new version of I Wish I Had Jesse's Girl.
Yes.
So I think we will go to our first caller, see what it is they might like to ask the Tarot this evening. And our first caller is calling in from area code 617. Are you there, caller?
I am. How are you?
I am good. Can you tell us what your name is and where you're calling
sure.
from?
My name is Keita. I'm calling from Boston.
Well, welcome, Keita.
Hi.
And what
Interesting.
Is
Interesting. I'm so late with us.
I know, really. What
it's
is
been very
like
informative. I am thinking about stepping away from my beloved just because things have gotten very heated, very nasty. And I just wanted to know, if I step away, does this make things worse? I'm hoping that it makes it better, maybe to just get some space for just clarity on both ends.
Cool, absolutely. So I'm going to pull a few cards for you using Lee's deck. All right. Yes. Well, okay, the card represents for the present is the Eight of Wands, which is it's how it's the need for energy. It's the need to be moving right now. It's the need to, like, get a lot of times the Eight of Wands is about getting unstuck. And if there's a lot of, there can be a lot of pent-up energy, like this desire to get forward, and this is, like, the move forward here. But in the future, there it looks like there's going to be still some more complications and some more drama. The Five of Wands came up, and that Five of Wands can represent when people are playing a little tug-of-war with each other. So I don't know if the beloved is going to be quite ready to let you go so easily, and they might make things a little difficult. The Five of Wands can be game-playing, for example. Some people see the people... in this deck, it's actually a hockey match. So that can get pretty intense. So... I pulled a card that was what to do in that situation, knowing that there's this energy, you want to be moving, want to get going, but that there's going to be some, a lot of wands. Actually, all the cards at the top are wands cards, which is fire energy. So the Four of Cups in is what came up as the what to do card. And in this deck, actually, it's a director auditioning some different people and talking to them. And so... just, I have a question for you. Is are you aware? Do you feel like aware of the quality that this relationship was lacking that you really desire? Can you give a name to that quality?
A quality that it desires.
Yeah, if I was to say like this relationship had a lot going for it, but it lacks blank. What would you say?
It lacks patience in understanding sometimes.
Okay.
I'm not ready to completely walk away and wipe my hands with it, but I gotta breathe because I feel like if we don't step back, we're gonna burn up.
Yeah, because the past card was the Six of Wands, which in the show we talked about six unequal relationships. It seems like one person's having to energetically support the other.
Yes.
So I think that it's going to be... I'm sorry, I did cut you off.
That's me doing the emotional supporting, and that's why I need to back up. It's me.
Yeah, we can't always be carrying others. And
exactly.
So my advice is that, yes, absolutely spread your wings a little bit right now and get the space that you need. But in order to alleviate the tensions, it's very important to be clear with them about why. So the Four of Cups is about emotional imbalance. Sometimes, like, there's things are okay, but there's something missing. It's the feeling like something needs to be completed. So expressing, I need for myself, I need some time for myself to find some balance. I need some time for myself to understand my goals and let the other person know this isn't about you or somebody's fault, but this is about what I need right now, and I need some, sometimes the Four of Cups is like, I need some time to like emotionally contemplate and like just get really still. Does that make sense to you? Does that resonate?
Yes, it does.
And
I've been saying, I've been saying this, and it's, no, it's either all or nothing. I don't understand what that means. And it's like, we're in a bad place. We're in a really bad place.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to leave you, but I need, so I don't end up hating you, you don't end up hating me. Let's just take the space.
Mm-hmm. So one watchword might be to kind of counteract, just because the Five of Wands came up in the future for that person, just let them know, I don't need any games right now. I don't need, like, this is serious. I'm serious. I'm serious about you. I'm serious about this relationship. But this sort of all or nothing attitude, it feels like a game. I don't know. That's my suggestion, but I don't know. If that feels true for you, then I would use that. But Hi C, what do you get?
Well, first of all, I'm going to support and validate you that it's time to take this step or this action, because the card that came up for you is the Princess of Discs, which would be the same as the Page of Discs in some decks. And so that says that it's time to stop thinking about or talking about what might need to be done and to start taking the actual step or the actual action in what it is you've been saying needs to be done, to try to at least be able to evaluate and assess the situation. And there's a sense with the Princess of Discs of creating an environment around me that is supportive of what it is that I'm trying to accomplish. So
right.
That may mean needing to have your own space in order to figure out what you need to figure out. The card that came up for the other person is the Star card, but this is contrasted by the card that came up for the relationship, which is the reversed Ten of Cups. And, you know, that would tell me that the other person may tend to kind of live on a wish and a prayer, where they think that any problems can be wished away, because Ten of Cups tends to be a very fairy tale kind of card. And reversing it shows us that, one, the fairy tale is over, so we have to start looking at the reality and be willing to start doing the work that it takes for a relationship to be able to stand the test of time rather than an indefinite honeymoon period kind of thing.
Right.
Plus, the Ten of Cups can be a bit of a card that is about addictions and things like that. And the reversal of it could show us either that the people in a relationship are almost addicted to each other or to the relationship, whether it's the good or bad aspects, they just kind of become addicted to whatever the cycle is. And the reversal is like saying we have to break the cycle at this point. We can't keep just getting back on that same hamster wheel over and over again and going nowhere and
right.
having things become more unhealthy, more toxic, if you want to think of it that way. The Justice card comes up, which shows us that you're doing the right thing and kind of, again, supports that idea that you have to stay true to yourself and do what you know to be right rather than worrying about what somebody else may feel and therefore pulling back or resisting doing something that we know is the right thing to do because we don't want to upset someone or hurt somebody's feelings. And the Hangman card comes up next to that, which really is saying, because of the position that it's in, that waiting any longer or letting this kind of just linger or hang around any longer is going to be greater detriment or greater obstacle to any sort of resolution, rather than thinking, you know, that time will heal the situation or if we just wait a little while longer, it'll get better. And, you know, then the Eight of Cups comes up. And so with the Ten of Cups reversed and the Eight of Cups, what I would encourage you to do is to at least not completely set aside the willingness to see both sides, which means seeing how the relationship could possibly work and move forward, but also being willing to look at what it might mean if the relationship has reached a point that I have to let go of it and move on, rather than thinking it can somehow be salvaged or saved or fixed. Because Eight of Cups is about emotionally letting go and moving on. Ten of Cups reversed is often about the separation or the ending of a relationship if it's not able to or ready to move to the next stage or the next level. So if nothing else, it's asking that you not think about things by not being willing to think about certain aspects of those things versus being willing to at least make room for the possibility of contemplating all of the possibilities.
There, I pulled one more card and I got the Ace of Swords. I was like, what should she be aware of? And the Ace of Swords to me says that a relationship has become very complicated and very heavy and taking place on many different levels, and it needs to become a lot more basic. And I think cut and clear is one way to do that, but also returning things to a state when they were just a little bit less complicated, a little less dramatic. And like,
right.
It feels like that would be really fresh and freeing for you. And if you can get clear, and like, I just want to echo what Heisty was saying about that Princess of Discs, that might mean like literally different, like not sharing space, not sharing a home. You might, then you get to reevaluate and say, like, do I have a hole in my heart shaped like that person right now? Do I really miss it now that I'm above it? Like, do I, because it's hard to get even imagine that when you're in the relationship. And then so often, God, when the Eight of Cups came up and this Ace of Swords, it's like, who am I without this person? And do I like my life better this way? And the only way to find that out is to actually be living that emotionally and physically, and then make any hard choices. But I've got to tell you, Ace of Swords, Eight of Cups, these are strong, like, relationship, it's time to move on cards.
Wow. Can I ask a question about, really quickly, you said something about, was it Five of Cups?
The Four of Cups earlier?
Yeah, when you said that about game playing.
Oh, the Five of Wands. Yeah, the Five of Wands. Go ahead.
I was just wondering, when you talk about game playing, like examples, is it like, I'm confused, like when we're talking
okay.
about the game. Like, I want to be with you, but I don't want to be with you. Like, what are we talking about here?
So game playing represents, so when the Five of Wands, a lot of the time, you'll see the card, all these people are fighting, but they're not wearing the same uniforms, and it looks like they're just play acting. They're not really serious about what they're doing. And this card comes up often for me when people are just being emotional, and they're just messing with people. Like, they're not serious, and they're kind of toying with someone's emotions and just acting out their aggression. So they say things that they just know will just hit the right button. You know, the Fives are really trying experiences. They're teaching experiences. They're hard, like they're like the learning experiences. And this is the Five of Fire. So this is like trial by fire. And it just has a tendency for people to say the thing that will hurt, you know, or say the really how can you do this to me kind of thing. They're not really asking it to ask or to get information anymore. They're just being hurtful. That's like what this card can represent. I mean, I'm going to leave it to you to decide like how strongly that feels like it's being acted out. This is the one what's approaching, but I think it's already begun.
So it's basically people that they're just doing it just to be doing it, not for
yeah,
hours,
like they don't want to win. They just want to kind of just, it's a drama.
Okay, I got it.
Sorry, I wish I had better news.
No. You know, I mean, we've been talking about this, and we've been talking about, you know, have we gotten to that point where it's just over and done with? Are you willing to do this? I think there are so many outside factors that are just putting extra stress on it. And but this is a conversation that we've been having. Can we save this? Does this work? But it requires for the other party to bend. It's like when it came up in the reading that it was one person carrying everything, it's me. And the other person needs to be willing to bend or this doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
One person can't carry somebody for so after a while, it gets too heavy for you to carry that load.
Exactly.
So, yeah, this was a great reading. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Hope you're able to get some space and get free to reevaluate in the next couple months.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you for having me.
So now we're going to move to our next caller, who's calling from area code
210. Are you there, caller?
I am. How are you?
I am good. Can you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
Mike, and I'm calling from Texas.
Mike? Is that what your name was?
I'm sorry?
And you said your name was Mike?
Correct, yeah.
All right. And so, Mike, can you tell us what it is you'd like for us to look at for you today?
I wanted to see in reference to relationships.
Okay. Is this about a particular relationship or just about your love life in general?
Let's go with love life in general.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. And one more. Sorry, tarot and radio is kind of interesting sometimes. Let's see. Okay. All right. In the past, I have the moon, and I'm using Lee's deck, which we talked about earlier in the show. And this is the one card that actually shows sex on the card, the moon card. And so my interpretation, it looks like in the past, things in the relationship sphere were more about the physical. There's a more interest in the wild side of things. Often the moon is like our primal nature, our call from the moon to like our, it's the urge to merge. So it looks like, and then that's contrasted. It moves to the three of coins, which actually talked about in the show. That's the parent painting their child's room. So it looks like the shift that's recently happened, and let me know if I'm off base, but it looks like a shift that's recently happened is that in the past, not really knowing what we're looking for in a relationship and sort of being pulled in one direction or another and not really feeling like we ever kind of know what we want. And then that has recently changed and there's an urge to be much more serious and to have a much more established relationship. Am I going down the right path here? Yeah. Because the three of coins often represents merging our talents with others and building something greater. So, like, this idea of, like, building the relationship that is sort of got a strong foundation. Your future is the Youth of Wands, which in this deck shows an artsy young guy hanging lights actually in a theater. So there is someone for you in the future, and they've got kind of a bold sensibility. They might seem kind of young, but very youthful. And they like to act, even if they're afraid. They like to kind of go with their gut and try something, even if it scares them a little bit. So this is going to be a great person for you. But I pulled one. The last card I pulled is like, what do you need to do? What's the action? And I got the Devil card, which in this deck is self-hatred. So one thing I want you to do for yourself before, you don't have to do this if you don't want to, don't let me, but what I want you to do for yourself before you meet this guy is look at issues of not feeling good enough, not feeling whatever enough. The self-hatred card, especially in this deck, it's all about our idea in our head that we're not lovable, not enough, not perfect. And that in the past with the moon card, so the Devil and the moon card, kind of the suggestion there is that a thing that got in the way of love is could have been either low self-esteem or doing things that we thought, doing things only because we thought it's what other people wanted, or doing things because we thought it would make people like us more. And that was an illusion. And before you meet this next person, before you get into that pattern again, look at, like, confidence and, like, a bit more self-love. Even if it feels like faking it, just start with, like, maybe affirmations about self-love, because you are worth it. You are amazing. He's attracted to you, you know, and the two of you can share a lot of great qualities, and he will be, I keep saying he, now the knight of, because in this deck it's male, But the user, I mean, it could be any gender, so I don't want to just assume. But this person...
No, you're correct.
Okay, I'm just like, wait a minute, what the heck is going on? this is going to be someone who's passionate and has got kind of a great spark and a joy for life. And sometimes it might seem like a bit much, but I think it's going to be great for you. But does that resonate that in the past something that got in your way was like lack of self-confidence and not feeling good enough? Am I making that up? Am I crazy?
No, I think you're partially right, but I've just honestly, I've been hurt by a lot of people, and so it kind of showed me more or less what not to go for, or more kind of like warning signs in the beginning. Like one thing that I kind of realized when I started looking at like past and analyzing my relationships is that I would get with these guys who, obviously when they start talking about their ex repeatedly, hello, that means like stop talking to them. And that's when I started to realize it's a pattern that I was getting myself into.
Cool. Looks like you need someone less jaded.
I'm sorry?
You need someone less jaded. The Youth of Wands definitely doesn't have like any jaded quality about them, so that's going to be, I think, positive. But Heisty, what have you got?
Well, just to tag on to what you were just saying there, I think the Youth of Wands may be indicating... Sometimes that can come up to indicate somebody who's younger than you, but that doesn't have to mean age-wise. It could also mean that because of the experiences you just said that you've had, that perhaps focusing on trying to develop relationships with people you meet that have not necessarily been in a serious relationship before, so that they don't have some of that jadedness, so that they don't even have the ability to talk about their ex all the time because there is really no ex to talk about. And that may be able to help a little bit in moving beyond the fear you have of ending up with somebody that's going to go down that path yet again, because there is no path for them to go down since they haven't had that experience. The cards that came up for me, now I'm going to start by saying the cards that came up for me also show quite a nice, hopeful, ultimate future, long-term outlook, because the Four of Wands comes up in the long-term outlook position, and that's a card that very traditionally has indicated marriage or whatever the equivalent is for you in terms of a committed relationship or that level of relationship. And so it bodes well that seems that kind of relationship or that kind of commitment is in your future. But there's a couple of things that have to be dealt with first. The first three cards I'm going to just look at kind of as a group here. We have the reversed Chariot card, the Devil card, and it's interesting because the Devil card is in the position for me of what can help or what can we do to help the situation, which is similar to Charlie and how he pulled it, which was what action needs to be taken, and the same card came up. And so there's the reversed Chariot, the Devil, and then the reversed Queen of Pentacles. Now, one thing that combination could say to me is right now what you need to focus on is coming to a deeper and better understanding of what sex means to you, what a physical relationship means to you, and also your relationship with your own body and your own sense of sexuality. And that doesn't mean gay or straight, that just means your relationship to sexuality and how you express it. And so the reverse Chariot card can say to take things slow or to not be trying to move towards or into a serious relationship right now. The Devil card, on the one hand, you know, especially because it's in this position, I often see it come up to say, take a walk on the wild side. It's time to explore some of the inhibitions and taboos that you might have either put on yourself or you have simply taken on because that's what you were told in terms of like what you should do or you're supposed to do or what's good and what's bad, what's right and what's wrong. We need you to come to your own understanding and relationship of that, rather than allowing outside influences to determine that for you, and you're trying to live up to, please, or not feel guilty by doing things that you think somehow, and this can go very deep because we may operate from this level without realizing it, but things that we think we need to feel guilty about that then get in the way of being able to engage in a relationship in a healthy way because we're constantly operating from a subconscious level of, well, maybe this is not right. And that's where the self-hatred thing comes in, even though that's kind of a harsh term. But it's this subconscious feeling of I'm doing something wrong, or I'm doing something I need to feel guilty about, and therefore it gets in the way of us being able to fully open up to a relationship experience or to fully express ourselves in some way. The Devil card, well, and also the Queen of Pentacles reversed coming up next to that, because anytime that card is reversed, it often is an indication of issues around body image or being comfortable in our own skin or being able to express ourselves not only by doing for somebody else on a physical level, but also being able to ask for what we need and to receive on a physical level and open up in that way. And that's where it comes back to that working on that relationship around sex and our body image and our physical expression and being able to ask for what we need and being able to receive that rather than simply seeing us as the pleaser or the doer. And, you know, the Devil card can often be a caution about addiction. So, you know, one, you may have a past with tending to get involved with people that have some sort of addiction issues. And whether that's drugs and alcohol or whether that's codependency or whether that's sex addiction or food addiction, but it's an unhealthy relationship to something because it tends to be an overindulgence to the point that something is controlling them. And rather than them being able to be in control. What was that?
I said I didn't realize that until you just said that right now.
But if you look back at your
factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly.
So that's another thing you want to really be careful of, because you want to look at your pattern of relationship and maybe look and see how have you perhaps been an enabler. How have you overlooked things? How have you helped to allow excuses and justifications to be made for people's behavior that have led to difficult or unhealthy relationship experiences so that you can start acting and operating differently in future relationships rather than expecting the people other than you to always change or be different? And then the Five of Swords comes up reversed. And this is in the short term. Now, the fact that the Devil card came up here, well, I'll put it this way. The reverse Chariot card tells me that we're not really worried about even looking for a relationship possibility until at least after the summer, and the reverse Queen of Pentacles may even push it until after the fall, because the Devil card and then the reverse Five of Swords really kind of point to the same time period. Reverse Five of Swords is after the fifth week of winter. I base that off of the solstices and equinoxes, so we're looking at mid to late January with that. Devil is the card of Capricorn, so there seems to be something very significant around that time period of Capricorn. Capricorn is December 20th to January 20th, so I would just say around the latter part of January may be a time when you start. Now, this is very dependent on you doing some of this personal work for yourself. I know this is going to sound like perhaps a weird thing to suggest, and you can decide whether to do it, of course, based on your own comfort level, your own morality issues and that kind of thing. But I would actually look at this and say spend the rest of this year just going out and having a good time physically, but not necessarily looking for relationship, so that you can be reminded of what it's like to simply be wanted, to be, you know, lusted after, to feel as if somebody finds you attractive or appealing. And also practice in that being able to ask for and perhaps play the role of opposite of what you normally do. If you tend to be the pleaser, then play the role of asking for what it is that you want. If you tend to always demand what it is that you want, play the role of giving up that control and allowing somebody else to ask for what they want and just pleasing them. So whichever role you tend to take on, practice being the opposite. Practice being different, because we need to open up that other side in you so that you can start to engage in future relationships differently.
Okay, so you don't see anyone coming in soon then?
I wouldn't... I wouldn't anticipate it until probably at least after the first of the year.
I just know that, from my spread, my interpretation is, yeah, that there is someone on his way, that youth of wands that came up for me, so...
Well, right, and the four of wands that came up for me also says, but it's in that long-term position, so it says they're not right around the corner, but it is there for you, but there are things that you need to work on and do and experience first so that you'll be ready.
Have a great summer. Yeah, I pulled what's one more card, and I got the Fool, which in this deck shows a guy hitchhiking, actually, and there's a truck coming up, so I'm going to let you interpret that. But it sounds like a lot of movies that I've seen.
there a truck stop near you?
There's a time for... No, I won't go to a truck stop. But there's a time for a bit of fun and keeping it light, but there are good things on the way. I don't have... Neither of us got, harrowing symbols in your future, so we don't... There's no watch out for this next guy kind of stuff.
But the Devil really underscores that Fool card, because it's another card that says go out and have a good time. Mm-hmm. You know, give yourself freedom and permission to just go out and enjoy for a while rather than looking for or worrying about finding the one, finding that relationship. Just enjoy yourself, enjoy being yourself, and enjoy discovering what it is that appeals to you, what turns you on, what feels good by sampling some of those things so that you'll know that better about yourself when you go into a new, more serious relationship.
Yeah, I've done some sampling.
Well, but again, I would come back to you. This is the opportunity for you to go out and sample things you haven't given yourself permission to try before, that you've always been curious about, or to be in a position or a role that you've not been in before, or that you've not allowed yourself to be in before.
Okay, I may try that, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that everything that I wanted to try, I think I've pretty much tried it already.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but that may be allowing somebody else to be the one that writes the scenario, and then you just experience it, because it's not what you have to think about in terms of what you want to do. It's just going along with what somebody else is creating and doing, but you're able to play a role in that. So it's not so. So it may not be about you going out and trying something you've always thought about trying. It may be going out and trying something that somebody else is suggesting that you've never thought about trying.
Okay.
Which really means you have to work on your communication issues, because it means you have to be willing to ask people things like, tell me what would turn you on. Tell me what your fantasies are. And then you be willing to try and help them to make those become a reality, rather than it's something that you thought up or dreamed up or told them to do.
Okay.
So hopefully that helped a little bit. And there is hope. I mean, my goodness, we both got cards that really show that there is something a little bit down the road for you. But you have to go down the road to get there. And right now you're just on the road part, but you're not at that destination just yet.
Right. Okay, perfect. Thank you very much, guys.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
And enjoy the rest of the week.
Thanks.
Now, Charlie, if you're up for it, there does seem to be one more person in the queue that has been waiting
ever
so patiently.
I'm up and down. There we go. Absolutely. Let's do it.
Well, you are on a business trip in a hotel.
let's just, yeah.
So this is someone calling from area code 646. Are you there, caller?
Yes, I am.
Well, welcome to the show. Can you tell us what your name is?
Thanks for staying up so late.
I know.
Hi.
Can you tell us who you are and where you're calling from?
Sure. My name is Kayla from New York.
Kayla.
Hi, wow. Kayla.
Another East Coast person. You people stay up late for these things, don't you?
We appreciate it. What can we do for you?
What are you picking up regarding
career. Okay.
Are you just wondering how things are going in your career or whether to make a change at this time?
Yes, actually, yeah.
So yes to which one? To whether it's a good time to be making a change?
Let's see what comes up. Okay. Looking at what things are going and possibilities for change. Oh, boy. Okay. Yes to change. The past is the Nine of Cups. So it's interesting. Nine of Cups is a lovely, lovely, lovely card. It's very sweet, but you have it in the past. And that suggests that things were better where you are before. Like things used to feel a bit more full and a bit more complete. This is in this deck it's actually an astronaut of all things, but he's kicking back and relaxing and feeling pretty good. But the present card, here comes the Devil again. It's that self-hatred card. And one thing I want to highlight in this one, it's someone looking at a painting of the perfect family and feeling like they don't have it. So in a career, it would represent sort of seeing other people having the career that you want and deserve and sort of feeling like left out from that. Does that relate? Does that sequence of cards relate for you?
Somewhat?
Okay, a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So in the past, happiness. Now, this is sort of just, there's a lot of dissatisfaction with where we're at right now and feeling like the Devil in a career position can represent like feeling like our energy and all of our work is kind of going to nothing. Sometimes people think of the Devil card as like consuming energy and consuming all mm-hmm. of our work, and it's sort of, it's like being stuck on a hamster wheel. So your future is the Three of Wands. And that is good. It's moving in a bit. To me, the Three of Wands happens when we get over our fear about leaving something safe behind and take the plunge. Three represents, to me, three in the minor arcana is when things really manifest. They really start taking shape. And you go from the Two of Wands, where it's like, oh, I really wish, if only, God, I could really do this. The Three, it starts to become real. It's just really putting yourself out there in a big way. So the next step for you is going to be kind of announcing that you're ready to make this change and updating the LinkedIn profile and networking, because Threes also represent kind of people coming together and to create something pretty positive. Now, the one card that is, so the card that I pulled, like, what to do right now, like, in this time, the Ace of Wands, which, absolutely, it's time for a significant career change, not just an upgrade of where you're at the moment, but the Ace of Wands is kind of, like, manifesting what we really desire and getting it. So I would, it looks like not just for career change doesn't mean just place you work or company, but are you thinking about changing industries at all? Hello?
Are you still there with us?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes. Can you hear me?
So, yeah, so the question was the Ace of Wands. To me, that's a pretty big new change. Have you thought about changing industries?
Somewhat.
Somewhat? Okay. This would be, it looks like you haven't taken any steps toward that, but that might be what to do. So the Ace of Wands as an action card, as the thing to do would be, actually, I would, resumes and social network profiles, I would say start from absolute scratch rather than updating something that's existing. I would say take it down to its roots and just start something completely new and rebranding yourself. The Ace of Wands can be representing your personal brand, like what your personal brand stands for and how you communicate it. It's time to change that in a big way. Does that make sense? Does that resonate for you?
Yes, but I really don't know how, like what direction it's going in, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I enjoy it, the industry I'm in, but I'm open to change something along the same lines on my own.
Well, yeah, so the Three of Wands, and then I'm just bogarting this one, but the Three of Wands can represent, it's a bigger risk. So when you said just now something, doing it on my own, it kind of represents that doing something that's more essential to what you want to do and more your idea, more your baby, there's more risk involved there, but it, from the layout, it looks like that would pay off well for you. So I think the first thing, starting from scratch with the resume would help kind of reorient yourself like a little bit and kind of see like what are your skills, what are your talents, what do you have in your tool chest that is going to help you. But I see, what did you get? So I have a weird little transition to you every time, don't I?
It's funny. Well, I was just going to add for the Three of Wands that I often see that card as expansion and moving into foreign territories. So there is a sense that it's time to start thinking bigger, whether that means beyond where you're at, more globally, moving into new territory. But the idea is expanding into places that you've not been before. Rather than, and whether that means you stay in the same industry, but you expand into areas or aspects that you've not been in before, or whether that means expanding into something brand new, it's kind of like stepping into a foreign country or into foreign territory. That is often, the Three of Wands for me will often also indicate that. And, you know, the first card that came up from the ones that I pulled was the Hermit card, which is a nine. Nine is a number of completion of a phase or cycle, and the Hermit card is sometimes the wanderer. So it's time to start wandering, to start setting down the path of where I'm going to go next, rather than staying put in what I'm already in. Because at some point, the hermit has to come out of the cave. So, and you know, when I first looked at this card, I was worried that I was going to say it was the moon because I kept fixating on the image of the moon in this particular deck, the Cosmic Tribe that I'm using. And the moon can represent the natural phases and cycles of things. And here we have the first crescent of the moon, which is kind of like the beginning of a new moon or the waxing moon. So there is a sense of it's time to start moving towards a new phase and that the natural cycle, the natural timing for that is coming up. I would say it doesn't come to fullness until it gets to the full moon, so we're not quite there yet, but it's time to start making preparation, setting the intention, and laying the groundwork for where you want to be going and making that change. And the cards that I have also support changing. It says staying in what you're in is going to become more and more turbulent, I guess you could say. You know, we have Four of Cups reversed, and then we have the Nine of Wands reversed. And Nine of Wands being the last card there for staying put is kind of saying we're ignoring the nine, which is like not paying attention to that something has come to its natural end of a life cycle and that it's time for change. And Nine of Wands is also a card of exhaustion. So it can show that it would be the reversal of that can show that we've exhausted the possibilities or we're very close to exhausting the possibilities that staying in what you're doing right now will have to offer you. There won't be room for growth or advancement or challenge, and it'll start to become very stale, and then you'll just start to feel drained because you're putting energy into something that isn't really doing anything for you anymore. And the cards for going, making a change,
Well, I just want to say with the Four of Cups reversed, I would say that that's why just laying the groundwork and setting the intention and starting the process right now is really important. One, because astrologically, as I said earlier in the show, we have not only the summer solstice energy, but we have, there's Jupiter energy that's really going on that's extremely prevalent during the summer, but goes on for the rest of for another year because it just started. We have Neptune and Saturn doing their little dance right now, and that really is about bringing dreams into reality. But you have to know what you're dreaming. You have to know what your dream is, what your vision is, what your goal is, what your intention is. So now we've identified that it's time to start thinking about making a change. You don't have to make it tomorrow, but it's time to start coming up with the vision and the intention of where you want that change to take you, or what you want it to look like, or where you want to go next. And part of it is building on what you've been doing. But it's time to expand that out. It's time to look at, what have I done? What have I accomplished? What fruits of my labors have I been able to see come to fruition? And now, how do I expand on that potential? How do I take that to the next step or the next level? Because for making a change, first, well, in this deck it's called the Knight of Wands. Most decks it would be the King of Wands reversed. So again, that would tell me not until after the summer are we really going to start taking action on this. But that's because you have to come back to understanding. King of Wands can be about being the creator of my own destiny. And reversing it can sometimes mean that we are abdicating responsibility for our destiny and handing over the creation of it to someone or something else. So use the summer to start taking back the vision for yourself, rather than putting the vision or the what happens to you in your career in somebody else's hands, so that you know what you want. You know where you want to go, you know what your goals are, what vision you want to bring into reality, and then you can start taking steps towards doing that on your own terms rather than on somebody else's terms or how somebody else has described that vision for you. And then that's followed by the Seven of Pentacles, which is where we see kind of building on or expanding. I'm bringing in the Three of Wands that Charlie had too, but it's expanding on the fruits of our labors that we've already been able to do. So Seven of Pentacles for me indicates that we've laid a really strong groundwork, but now we need to work from there and build from there. So we have the foundation, we have something to support what it is that we want to do. Now we just need to go and think bigger. And Seven of Pentacles, I would say two things there. One, I would say pay attention to, especially if you use the summer to start laying that groundwork and doing that kind of thing, you'll start to see the results of what it is that you do over the summer, probably towards the latter part of September, and middle September to the latter part of September. Seven of Pentacles would be like the last part of Virgo, which goes to September 20th, which is actually interesting because that's fall equinox, which is harvest. And Seven of Pentacles can also represent the latter part of November. So I would look at both of those time periods and say that one, around September, if you really are doing your visioning, your intention, your groundwork during the summer, you'll start to see results from that in September. And then probably by November, you would see the fruits or the payoff, which means maybe you'll start to see opportunities or identify the things that represent what it is that you're wanting to do by September. You start applying to those or putting those into motion or taking steps towards making those a reality at that time. And it won't take very long. By latter part of November, you will start to see the efforts of that pay off. But all of that timing is dependent on you using the summer to think bigger, to be confident and courageous in not limiting yourself in how you vision and what you consider doing, but to dream big and envision big. And the bigger we envision, the more potential and opportunity we have to fulfill. And we may not get there overnight, but at least things are taking us towards that. If we think too small, then we accomplish the small thing, but then we're stumped. We don't know where to go from there because, well, I accomplished what I set out to do. Now what? So really this is a time period for just dreaming big and visioning big and setting grand intention so that you're working towards something big, and it may take smaller steps, but that big thing will be there to continue using as kind of a guidepost to be moving towards, rather than simply getting to the first mile marker and now not knowing where to go because you hadn't thought any further beyond that.
I pulled one more card just to ask what industry, because you mentioned not knowing what to go into, and I got the Four of Swords, which suggests, I'm just going to throw some things out there. Now, like, as far as career paths, tarot can be a bit indistinct because there's not like a podiatrist card or, you know, an interior decorating card. But the Four of Swords suggests someone who helps others heal, helps others take care of themselves, someone who gives people kind of what they need. This could be a card of social work, working in a spa, something in the medical world, something in therapy, but helping people find wholeness, helping people find peace. It represents also, you know, event management, if all things, comes up for me with this card, because this is taking care of detail work for people, and that comes up a lot in different marketing things like event management or PR, because it kind of helps people, I say this, I work in PR, it helps people it gives people the space and the time to do what they need to do to be great. Does that make sense? Does any of that resonate, or how would you kind of feel at that Four of Swords energy about bringing people rest?
I definitely see that. Definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Cool.
I certainly see that, because I started, I'm in the field of cosmetics and fragrance and beauty, which I love. However, I did begin my studies as a holistic healer, and I love, you know, the astrology and numerology. So I know with the planets all going to be in the water signs during the summer, it is an abundant time, especially with Jupiter going into Cancer.
Right, and we have the two.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just saying, yeah, we have the two grand water trines, and especially the big one in July. So, you know, that's going to support pursuing that kind of work. And I would say with the Four of Swords, that because part of what I was seeing was an expansion of what you're already doing rather than a shift into something completely new. And I think that it may be, and Charlie also talked about something from your past. And so I think that it may be taking what you've been doing with cosmetics and fragrances and that kind of thing. I would see it as moving into the realm of aromatherapy and using natural herbs and aromas and essential oils in a healing way. But you could combine that by being able to use that, say, in doing facials for someone, or how to make your own natural cosmetics, you know, or add it to natural cosmetics for specific purposes, whether it's for internal healing, for physical aspects, you know, whether it's a physical boost of energy or whether it's an internal healing process. But I think that Four of Swords, because there's that sense of helping people rest, helping people to retreat, helping people come to a place where they can get a good night's sleep. And so, you know, combining what you already are doing, but moving back into how do I do that in a more holistic and healing way and a more natural way.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I have been thinking along those lines.
Well, it sounds like you're somewhat familiar with the astrology aspects. and so I would encourage you to use this summer and those energies that are going on to really consider, to continue pursuing what you've been thinking about, and don't limit how you think about it, or how you see what is possible for yourself, or even what you see yourself capable of doing. mm-hmm. because it's ripe and it's fertile ground for taking what you do, expanding it into a more healing thing that will benefit people at a deeper level.
That was beautiful.
So
thank you.
One Ace of Wands thing for you to do would, by the solstice, around the solstice, give your brand a name.
Yes. I've been thinking about it, but I don't know.
So take what we told you earlier in the show. Make the sun tea. Maybe between now and the solstice, do the empowerment practice that I talked about. Make the sun tea on summer solstice and go and sit in the sun drinking that tea. With citrine would actually be really good because citrine is about attracting prosperity and abundance to us, but also helping to bring that clarity of vision and clarity of enlightenment and illumination for things. And that Ace of Wands is very much the summer solstice card. So, you know, use the energy of that summer solstice, and summer solstice is right in the middle of these grand water trines. So you have all of that energy to access. And hopefully we've given you a few tools that you can also use to enhance that process. and do as Charlie was saying, you know, empowerment practice up to summer solstice. Then as you sit under the sun on summer solstice drinking your sun tea, you know, say out loud the brand, the intention, what it is that you are now going to be bringing into the world and how you're going to shine that into the world.
Good luck.
So there you are. We've given you your homework.
There we go.
Thank you so much.
And if you didn't hear what we suggested earlier in the show, you can always listen to the archive and it's there.
Right on.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Enjoy and listen.
Feel free to call back in and let us know what your brand is and what you're doing.
Thank you.
All right.
I certainly will. Thank you. Have a great morning.
Thanks. You too.
Bye-bye.
Well, hi, C. Here we are again. Another show behind us.
Now, if you want to go, there was somebody who was waiting, but they didn't have the little thing that showed they wanted to talk, but then I think they punched the one to show us they wanted to talk. So if you can't stay, that's okay, but I was just going to go ahead and
let's see what they've got,
indulge them.
Sure.
And I find her name very amusing because she must be calling in by Skype, and her name is Mary Lou Who.
Wasn't it too?
Are you there, Mary Lou Who?
I am. I listened to the whole show.
Holy goodness. Well, then you deserve a reading.
And I wasn't sure if you wanted one because it didn't show the little thing until just a minute ago. Did you not press one until just a little while ago?
So I was thinking, oh, he's going to give me a reading because he says there's one last one.
Well, that's you. What can we help you with?
You know, I would like to ask about my love life and see what your take is on it. Because I want one. You know?
Okay, let's see.
Just saying.
Where is it that you're Skyping in from?
New Orleans, Louisiana.
Oh, all right. Let's see. A very magical tune. All right, I'm going to pull Love Light. Let's see. One more card. Lemon. Oh boy. Okay.
Uh-oh.
So, a big thing.
That's always reassuring to hear.
You. That's right. You know, do you
oh, like, look at your love life. Oh, look at your love life.
Holy God.
Yeah,
no.
Can you rephrase that?
So we're gonna start. Before I go to the past, present, future card, let's just go straight to the what to do. And you got death, which. Represents in a love what to do spread. It's about letting go of what happened, letting go of the things that were unfair that happened in the past relationship, or even sometimes it's letting go of how perfect another relationship was, or how perfect for us someone else was. It's death, inner love, what to do, spread, suggest. And you let me know in a second if I'm just going down the sundry path here. But that memory and holding on to something or into a past relationship or hope for a past relationship is getting in our way. Am I off base? What's going on?
You're not off base.
Okay, right on. So it just that's the main thing. A couple other things, let's see. The reason I say that the sun came up in the past, which kind of like in the last call, it's certain cards are great when they're in your future and they're a little strange when they're in your past. It looks like there was a big, important light time, but it's gone now. And we're at the Fool, which is starting from scratch and feeling like we have nothing to go on, you know, completely at the beginning of a new journey. And that can be pretty frustrating because it can feel very big. It can feel very immense to try and, like, where do I go from here? How do I even take that first step? That, you know, they say that the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. Well, it's hard to take that step if there's 1,000 miles ahead of you, right? So
especially when you take that first step 1,000 times.
Yeah, exactly. And so the Fool kind of represents sometimes feeling like, God, like, I'm just at square zero. Like, what's going on? And here's a funny thing. So your future is the Emperor. And the Emperor is a great card when it's about self-improvement. And the Emperor is a great card when it's about, you know, getting a career in line. But it can be a weird card in love because there's so much control going on. And this particular Emperor is kind of he's a director. So my question for you is, what has been the pattern for you with someone in the relationship being in charge?
What has been the pattern?
Yeah, in the past. Because the Emperor is in your future and sometimes that concerns me in a love spread because it can feel very controlling and it can suggest being with someone who is very controlling of us. And so I thought I would check in with you about that.
Yeah, well, my pattern is to learn how to not be controlled by men.
Ah, how's that going so far?
You just make them all go away. It works fine.
There we go. Yeah, because I think, well...
That's why we're divination with a queer twist. It's time to go lesbian.
That's right. I mean, it's the options there. But and the Death card would sort of, you know, that would be putting something behind us. But there's a pattern. And we can help you more with this in a second. But, like, the Death card coming up where it did in the spread is the most significant thing for me, which is that, you know, like the guy goes to the doctor and he says, Doc, it hurts when I do this with my arms. And the doctor says, well, then don't do that. So just sort of getting into the same fundamental pattern and asking, like, so I'd ask myself, what is it about me that attracts, you know, the controlling types? What is my bat signal for psychos?
Oh, it's a past life pattern I set up. I'm quite aware of it.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So I get it,
but how do we get her out of this?
Let's just move on. So,
yeah.
Is there anybody that comes along that hopefully you won't repeat that pattern with because you're aware of it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can still repeat it even when you're aware of it.
Mm. Oh, absolutely.
Like, man, I don't like that. Why is it still?
Well, it's funny. So I asked that question. How do I what to do with the next person to not repeat that pattern? And I got, he's been up all night. The Devil card. Every reading, the same card keeps coming up. So there's kind of a devil thing going on right now. But, so in this deck, the Devil is self-hatred, and it's the idea of telling ourselves that we're the problem, or we're not good enough, or we're not right somehow. And so, for me, this suggests this is what suggests to me, and you can kind of take on what you want to take on from this, but when encountering these types that have been in the past, that you kind of you have a past life experience with, it's very easy to see, they're very charismatic about their particular vision of how things are, and they are easy, they easily sell you on, or able to sell people on this idea that you need to get on board with them, like follow their pattern, follow their guidance and their lead. And so you've got the devil and the emperor. My watchword for you is to not spend any time with any person who seems like they have an agenda about fixing you. Like that has to be like sometimes we say like, oh my God, I always end up with this, like early on, like all the, think of like the yellow flag, let the yellow flag be the red flag this time. Like when this person shows that there's a desire to fix you or change you, fundamentally,
after you're in the relationship, mm-hmm. that's why you don't see it coming.
Mm-hmm. It's,
because,
and so,
yeah,
the signs are there. Like in the, often, you know, when you date somebody, you think, oh God, like he was rude to that waiter. I should have known. But this desire to fix. Also, when you, it's like, if you ever date online, people's profiles give themselves away a lot, and people who are fixers often see themselves as givers. They see themselves as, you know, ready to be there for someone. And, you know, there's legitimate nice reasons to be there for someone. But sometimes when they kind of really put that out there, it suggests that they have an agenda, which is changing you for the better. And won't you be so grateful? And to me, like right away, if someone, like you can call them on it right away is my advice. I'm not saying like the second someone shows the sign, you have to like immediately leave. But call them on it. Be like, you know, I'm really happy with who I am, or how I don't, let's make something up. Like, you have like, any kind of pattern, any habit. I'm gonna say, I don't know. Let's just pick something. I always order the same thing in the restaurant. They're like, wow, you always order the same thing. Why don't you get something different? You know, wouldn't you rather? Blah blah blah. Like, actually, you know, I like this. This is what I do. I like, you know, I like doing this. I'm not interested in changing that. Like, if you kind of put it across, I'm not interested. Or
okay, can I throw this out there?
Sure.
Okay, so some emperors might want to fix you and control you and micromanage you.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't there some emperors that aren't really up in your business but still kind of stuck in their own cloud of self?
There's the throne aspect of being the emperor, that's sort of seeing yourself as above other people. Part of that, emperors, it's not a good or bad thing. It's just emperors are really good at being organized and determining the right course of action for people, and they just can be very steady. And in a healthy emperor, in a really healthy emperor, that represents self-control, and they just are able to handle their stuff. And they're able to manage people well because they manage themselves so well. And there's always going to be some kind of idea that their vision is great. So like a healthy emperor can take care of themselves, and that's enough. But it's the unhealthy one is the needing to be in charge of other people's experiences, needing to be in charge of other people's emotions, needing one kind of hallmark of this type of emperor is the kind of person who is so concerned about you having a great time that they have to manage every part of the day. Like if you guys go on a vacation together. Yeah, they have to, the itinerary, they have the whole thing. It's going to be great. You're going to have a good time. It's very important that you be having a good time the whole time, and they're going to make this the best for you, and it can just be very constricting. Does that resonate for you?
You did not respond correctly.
Yeah, like, why wasn't that good enough, you know?
So, you see an emperor coming up for me that's healthy or unhealthy?
Well, I see an emperor coming up for you, and the reaction from you is going to determine how do I break this pattern. So if the Emperors have been a problem and you got the Death card, I would say that this person is going to come into your life, and it's my advice to you is to not allow them to get their hooks into you, and just make it very clear from the beginning that this, you know, that you're happy with who you are. And if they show that they cannot, if they can't abide by that, or that just doesn't seem real to them, they can't agree to that rule, spend no more time with them, because that's wasting time you could be spending with someone who doesn't have that fixation or issue. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But
okay.
But the way it works, though, is the issue doesn't come up until you're deep in.
So, okay, here's what I would do then. Let's pick one person from the past that was a problem in this regard. And on I'm a big note paper kind of person. Or you can do it on the computer screen, but it's good to write it down just to kind of build a list. All of the symptoms of that, not like the big crux, the big issue, the great, you know, soul level thing that they were working on in this life, but the absolute, the symptoms of like what happened, like wasn't happy with this thing I cooked one time, or said this to me, told me, was, thought I was ungrateful, you know, and as specific as you can be, not just like, you know, was always telling me I'm late, but like told me I'm late, and it really felt like that. If you can pinpoint it, you will have a list, because you know these people show themselves. They show their colors. It's just you have to look for, because like remember early on we're always like our best, most ideal selves in dating, and that's, especially emperors are so charismatic, but they always, there's always that telltale sign. For me, it was a person, when I was in it with a person like this, it was like on the first date, saying he was really dissatisfied with a lot of his friends who didn't care so much about their careers, and all they really cared about was getting to the weekend and doing fun things on the weekend. And at the time, I was like, oh, you know, I get that. But it should have been like a watchword that this person was never going to be happy enough with where I was at in my career. So that was for me. Like, in that moment, I was totally like, use that, you know, it wasn't something offensive. It's not like they like right away do something like the appalling thing, but it was the sign.
It's actually a balance, and that person was probably going out of balance. It can't be one way, all one way or the other. It that throws you out of whack. Right.
Yeah.
So do I have someone coming up, an emperor?
That's why I think the future card, the absolute, the future card was the emperor. So let's find out more about him. Two of cups. Oh, you're going to fall in love with this person. So the two of cups is, they have great communication skills. They might actually work in some in the field of communication. And two of cups represents
marriage.
Like instant kind of, like, oh my God, I get you, attraction. So it's gonna be hard, but just this person's gonna be at some level kind of introspective, and because in this deck the High Priestess figure is in each of the twos, so this is a person's self awareness. They're gonna they might be in the field of psychology actually, or be very interested in psychology, and really. This can be at most positive. It's the person who's really self-aware. So that might be that healthy emperor who's just in charge of self. If it was to be negatively aspected, the two of cups would represent someone who's like always critical and a psychological level. But because I pulled this card to tell us more about this emperor, looks like this could be a potential really wonderful emperor for you, but that death card suggests that cannot allow the past pattern to be manifest in the relationship.
Okay.
Could
it be a relationship going to a better level?
Like a current one?
Yeah.
If, once again, if
That'd be a death card, a big change.
Yeah, the death card is suggests that letting go of something from the past. So I'd say let go of the thing that didn't work. Sorry.
Wait, it didn't work. It didn't happen.
No, the one... Oh, wait, so this is a relationship from the past that didn't quite...
It's just there, but it's not there, you know?
It's not going anywhere? Yeah,
It's not that it doesn't go anywhere. It just... doesn't go anywhere.
So the reason I don't think it's that one, I don't think that's the relationship that's going to be the significant one in the future, is that Two of Cups. Two of Cups is instant, is pretty instant, deep connection.
Well, it's got that.
Oh, it's got that? It's got that going on?
Yeah, but you know, some people are like fear-based and have their issues.
A lot of us. this person can be slow moving because, like, say, Two of Cups, and this one, this is a guy looking in the mirror and he's reaching out to the mirror. So, okay, of all the Two of Cups, because there's only one person on this card reflected, it can represent a level of self involvement. But that's just me sort of intuitively reading the art of this card.
The Two of Cups is a man looking in the mirror?
This one, in this deck, the Two of Cups is a man looking at himself in the mirror and reaching out to that mirror, reaching out to his reflection. And the figure in this, he appears in all the twos, and he is an introspective person. He's considered himself to be psychic.
Okay.
So, but I see over there.
Yes.
What have you got?
Well, that Two of Cups, because of the imagery that's on it, and then the cards that came up here for the first beginning of the cards that I got, I would say that the person you're talking about is probably a bit narcissistic and isn't able to see beyond themselves as to what somebody else needs and what a relationship needs, other than simply what they want from a person and from a relationship. And I say part of that is because the first cards that came up for me are the Five of Pentacles reversed and the Six of Swords. And Five of Pentacles reversed is about, and this is, goes back to what you have to recognize and start working on not allowing yourself to get into. Five of Pentacles reversed is about codependent relationships and probably about how you may tend to fall into the role of enabler for somebody. And that is something that you can recognize by looking at past relationships and how you have fallen into that role, and then be able to pay conscious and be very conscientious about, if that starts to happen in a new relationship, not letting it continue but moving on or away from it, which is what the Six of Swords would say. So Six of Swords, I think, here is also, and Five of Pentacles reverse is also kind of reiterating that it's not about this one that you're talking about that already exists. It's something that's coming in the future. But the overall tenor of the cards that came up for me, you know, now that Charlie has had to play bad cop, I will play good cop, is very hopeful here, because Five of Pentacles reversed can show that an opportunity or a window of change is opening for you, and therefore the chance to step through and take advantage of something that can be different than what you've been in before is going to be there. You just have to be willing to take that chance. The Six of Swords says you may have to be willing to move away from something in order to take that opportunity and move towards it, which may mean letting go of this situation that already exists in your life rather than trying to find a way to justify it continuing to be that thing that you want to hold on to. And then, you know, the Empress card comes after that, and I think this goes back to the Emperor card that Charlie had, because it's time for you to see yourself in a relationship as the Empress, as the equal ruler with the Emperor in the relationship, who has equal say, equal participation, equal needs, but also means I have to be equally willing to listen to the other person and hear what they need in the relationship too. But you need to elevate the vision of yourself to Empress, so that you see yourself on equal footing with the other person. There's a bee in the image here, and so it's like I'm the queen bee of the relationship at this point. And then, you know, coming up is the Ten of Cups and then the Strength card. And, you know, Ten of Cups, Two of Cups for me, like when he said that and you said, oh, that's the marriage card. Well, to me, that's not the marriage card. That's just the falling in love card.
Yeah.
Ten of Cups is more the marriage, the happy family with the kids under the rainbow kind of card. And so
that, and it's actually in the short term. So I anticipate that this is probably, there seems to be a new relationship opportunity with a much different kind of potential, a much different kind of feel, and a much different kind of experience for you to have in a relationship coming between now and October. And probably closer to October just because it's the Ten of Cups, but I would pay attention to that. Also the fact that the Ten of Cups, you know, it's interesting that the image here is actually 10 cups stacked on top of each other like a pyramid, which looks like a triangle, which probably reflects the grand water trines that we were talking about that astrologically are happening right now. And then again in July, there's a big one. Pay attention to who you meet and what kind of opportunities come along for engaging in relationship with new people between now and the end of July. By October, you would probably see something from this time period coming to full culmination or revealing itself as to what the full potential is for it. And the Strength card coming up says the long-term potential is that there's something that is much stronger and much more viable for being successful and being what you want. And I'm also going to give you something to look forward to, because I want you to look at the image of this Strength card. I don't think the chat room is still working. I'll put the link in there just in case it is, but it may not be. If you can't get into the chat room or see the link that I just put in there, then I just want you to do a Google search for an image of...
I'll see it.
Oh, you see the link?
Yeah.
Okay, so click on that link, and I just want you to look at that image, and that's what you have to look forward to coming up in the long term. That's all I'm going to say.
Because this chat room, but I'll, can I try it?
In the chat room?
It might take me out of the...
Oh, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine. Because you'll still be able to hear us on the phone or on Skype. But that's the image you have to look forward to. That's all I'm going to say there. So we're very hopeful. And Ten of Cups gives us a lot of hope as well. So pay attention to who you meet and what kind of dating possibilities and especially who you kind of suddenly feel a connection to or kind of have that, wow, I've talked to you for 5 minutes, but I feel like we've known each other for a long time. Pay attention to that between now and July, because you want to work on developing those, because I think those are going to become something, and by October you'll probably start to really see that it has great potential for the future to move to something much more strong and viable, with that Strength card being in the long term. So that's what I'm going to say about that. And hopefully that helped, because I'm going to have to end the show here very quickly or it's going to cut us off. But hopefully what Charlie had to say and what I had to say there has both helped and given you a bit of hope, because there's great hope in the cards, especially that came up for me with the Five of Cups and the Strength card, and even the ones that came up for Charlie as he was looking forward with the Emperor card and the Two of Cups. Those are also very hopeful cards. So what you're hoping for, what you're wishing for, has great potential and possibility for coming into being or for coming into your life between now and the end of the year. So really pay attention to who you're connecting with, who comes along, and especially when they represent something different from what you've been in before and is an opportunity to move into or be with somebody that is not codependent and all of the things that Charlie was talking about. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Thank you.
So, thank you very much for being so patient and calling in. I'm sorry it didn't show me the little thing that you wanted to come in for a reading. So I'm glad that you were willing to stick around and that we were able to get to you.
The Amethyst Oracle. Divination with a queer twist.
Divination with a queer twist.
The Amethyst Oracle.
Thank you for joining us. This program was brought to you by Firefly Willows LIVE. We hope you enjoyed the show. This is Deb Carosella. Please join us next time on Firefly Willows LIVE for Convergence with John Carosella, Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m.
time.